that's when we started doing that.
Especially when the applicant shows up at the hearing to see what the decision is.
They show up and we told them absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Basically, I agree.
But maybe we put the boilerplate that we include in the order. We just dispense with that, especially when there's a hearing.
Just cherry pick through?
Usually the first paragraph or two of the order is the substantive. And then you could just say plus.
There's usually three paragraphs at the end that says,
it says the same thing.
If you need less relief in actuality than we granted you, then you don't need to come back. One says, you got so much time to commence, and then get with the third
strict compliance with the...
Right, strict compliance. So, maybe we don't need to read those three. Most of the decisions, that we cut it down by about 75%.
Right, So that's a good idea, Mike.
Why don't you, when we get to the end and we're talking about hearings and that whole thing, maybe make a motion that we amend... what we're reading into the minutes to eliminate that boilerplate piece.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, and you can always say, plus other conditions as warranted or as set forth in the actual decision.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah, I think that would be okay. That would. Good evening, Lindsay Haley.
Hey, Lindsay.
Yeah, that would. I think that would make sense.
Okay.
I mean, not just because we have so many next time, but in general. Yeah. That would save us a little bit of time.
Okay.
And effort. So, I am going to make some comments at the beginning about a few agenda and wanting to hear from everyone, but we need to keep things on track. Do we get my attention? I'm going to try to not do it in the middle of a specific hearing. So I'll do it between hearings.
Okay.
But I think we're probably...
I'm used to long meetings.
Yes, I'm sure you are. I'm not. And I'm getting to be an old man, so... it doesn't always...
The last couple of years have given me limited experience. Long
car rides and traveling has told me that I'm... I don't have the capabilities I used to have. Let me put it that way.
Good to see you.
I'm not shaking hands, but good to see you. I'm at 558 also, so you're good. How you doing, Sandra?
Yes. The long line of people signing in.
I'm sorry? Oh, okay. Sure.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're okay. You're okay. I just want to make sure I didn't drop something.
Let's go over here where there are not microphones.
I agree.
You may have to go in there and get it.
No, me neither. I agree.
It's going to be a long meeting, guys.
Yep. Okay. Good evening, everyone. The February 16th, 2022 meeting of the Derry Township Zoning Hearing Board is called to order. I want to make everybody aware that it is and has been the policy of Derry Township to record meetings for the purpose of accurate notes and posting on the township website. This meeting is being recorded for those purposes. And David, have we started the recording?
Yes.
Valerie, thank you. Okay, we have a full agenda tonight, so I do want to ask everyone, you know, we want to make sure we fully hear give the applicants the opportunity to present their case. We also want to make sure that there's time for questions from the board members and that we also have time to hear from any members of the public who are here to talk about any of the cases. If you have not signed in, if you would please make sure you sign in on the sign-in sheet. That helps our folks with notes and helps our court reporter make sure they've got your name right and so on. Okay, so I would ask all the applicants and also members of the public to please keep your testimony focused on the issues and on the questions from the board members so that we can proceed along. At some point, we may take a recess for a short time if needed, depending on how long tonight's meeting takes. Okay, we'll do a roll call of members. Lindsay Drew?
Here.
Sandy Ballard?
Here.
Mike Angelo?
Here.
Tom DeDonis?
Here.
And me, Steve Seidel, I'm here as well. Okay. First order of business is approval of the minutes of the January 19th, 2022 meeting. I'd like to propose to adopt those minutes, a motion to adopt those minutes, with one change, that the word unable is changed to unlikely in two places regarding the request for continuances. Okay, we were actually able to have a quorum last time, but we were thinking we were going to be unlikely. So just want to reflect that.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Oh, Sandy.
Any discussion? I'm sorry, who seconded? Lindsay?
Sandy
did. Okay, Mike made the motion. Sandy seconded that motion. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. That motion passed, carries. All right, we have two items of old business tonight, both hearings. First is a continuance in the case of Brian M. Wheeler, case number 2021-16. So who is here? If you'd please come up to the podium. We need to swear you in, Mr. Wheeler. Yeah, is there anyone else that's going to be testifying on your behalf tonight?
Nope.
No, okay. So if you could please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony that you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay, thank you. Could you please state your full name and your address, please?
Sure. Brian Wheeler,
My current address is 504 David Drive in Mechanicsburg.
Before you begin your presentation, I just wanted to reflect for the record that our firm has represented you on matters other than real estate and zoning. And I'm making that disclosure, but it does not present a conflict of interest.
Okay, thank you, Megan. All right, you may proceed with your presentation.
Okay, thank you.
And maybe let me just add, I know you were before us a little over a year ago, and so I think it would be helpful to the board members to understand, as you make your presentation, what has changed in terms of your request versus what you had presented and we had issued an order on previously?
Sure.
Thank
you. Thank
you.
Okay. Will do. All right. Good evening. So as Steve indicated, I had come before the Zoning Hearing Board in December of 2020 to request a variance to enable the construction of a single-family home in Derry Township. That variance was to allow construction to occur on slopes in excess of 20% slope, or slopes greater than 20%. And that relief was granted at the time. I subsequently put the project out to bid a couple months later, and with the COVID craziness of last year, the bids came back much, much higher than the estimates that I had been provided by an architect, and well above the appraised value as well. So what I did was basically redesigned the home and the grading plan to bring it more in alignment with the pricing in the marketplace to try to get that to align with the appraisal. So basically, it's a smaller home. It's a similar grading plan, same location. I would not be seeking any additional relief beyond what was already provided. But given the nature of the changes to the design, in talking it over with Mr. Emmerich, he felt it was appropriate to come before the board to present this updated design and to request that the relief be granted. So with that, I can walk through the project, and I'll try to go pretty quickly here. I know you guys have a full agenda, but if I'm going too fast, just stop me and I'll answer your questions. So the location is 1130 Wood Road in Hummelstown. It's a vacant lot. It's part of what was referred to as the Roseland subdivision. The zoning district is residential R1. There's an environmental overlay, as I mentioned, that restricts development of slopes greater than 20%. The parcel size is 3.83 acres, and the request is to enable a portion of the project to be built on areas where the natural slopes are 20% or greater. So this just is a recap of the prior zoning approval. Again, relief was granted to allow 0.406 acres of the slopes that were greater than 20% to be disturbed within the building area. The approval also included a 120-foot wooded buffer setback from the Jonathan Eschenauer Memorial Trail. This just kind of describes the basis for updating the design. Again, this is just the zoning map showing the R1 designation. This is an outline of the parcel right next to the Bullfrog Pond there. This just shows the slopes that are greater than 20%. The red area is indicated accordingly. This was the original subdivision plan for the Roseland subdivision. It was basically started out as I think, four lots in total. That was approved back in 1985, so it was intended to be developed for residential purposes. Subsequently, there was a re-subdivision done that formed the parcel that I'm proposing to develop, which is characterized as lot number 1210. That was updated and approved in 1990. This shows the prior site plan that was approved last year. It was a larger home footprint, but the overall disturbance area is basically identical to what I'm proposing with this updated design. But I just wanted to illustrate what was previously presented and approved. This is maybe a little hard to see, but it just compares the prior approved building area, which is outlined in the orange hatched line there, with the currently proposed building area, which is the red dashed line. Again, they would both propose to disturb 0.406 acres that are greater than 20%, so the exact same disturbance area. This is another comparison, just so you can see both grading plans and what the differences are. The, I guess, pink-colored lines, or maybe magenta, would illustrate the prior grading plan, and the green is the proposed. One of the other objectives of this redesign was to reduce the magnitude of some of the retaining walls that were part of the original design, which are obviously pretty costly. So that was a measure that was employed to try to lower the overall build cost. You'll see that there's a different driveway alignment. The prior one kind of tied in up higher there on Roseland Road, and I'm currently proposing to take it down further towards Wood Road, but still tie into to Roseland Road. Again, that helps eliminate some of the retaining walls, but it does follow the alignment of an existing access road. So that there's already a basically a dirt road in place there, and this follows that alignment. So, you know, in terms of the hardship basis for the variance request, it's pretty much identical to what was presented last time. The topographical conditions solely create the hardship. So it's really just a function of the existing topography. Yeah, there's really no other good alternative locations on this particular parcel to construct a home. If you can jump ahead one slide there, David, I think. This just illustrates the alternatives that were presented as part of the last hearing. It shows two potential locations where the slopes are less than 20%. The one, which is denoted as alternative B, is in an area that gets flooded along Bullfrog Valley Pond there. That denotes the flood limits from Tropical Storm Lee. The other one, alternative A there, is located within a setback for the, I think it's a historical...
The community heritage buffer.
Thank you, David. Community heritage buffer. So that's not really a viable location. So that really left, you know, the location where I'm proposing to construct the home as the only other, you know, viable location where there are some flatter areas on the property. So the whole thing is pretty well sloped. So, you know, it's proposing to build one single-family home on a 3.83-acre property. It's zoned residential. It's low-density development. I don't believe it will adversely affect the character of the immediate area, which is primarily single-family residential properties. It is proposing to provide a natural buffer between the home and the Jonathan Eschenhauer Trail and the Bullfrog Valley Pond area. And I think that will help retain the essential character of the neighboring park area. I did want to note that the prior approval had included a setback of 120 feet from the trail. That actually ended up, when I plotted that on the drawing, it encroached into the disturbed area. It was very minor. I think there might be another drawing here if you skip ahead one more. Yeah, if you can maybe zoom in a little bit, David. Is there another drawing here? Go to the next one if there is one, please. Yeah, there, that one's better. You can see the 120-foot setback there, and it encroaches into that orange line, which was the prior approval. And it encroaches into the red line, which is what is currently being proposed ever so slightly. So I guess what I'm asking is for consideration that setback be reduced to 100 feet instead of 120. That would also be consistent with the amendment to the environmental overlay, which I think was just approved within the last year for other development in this area, that there'd be a 100-foot setback from the Jonathan Eschenhauer Trail. So for consistency's sake, I'm asking for consideration that setback be 100 feet. So I think that's, you know, really the highlights. I tried to do the best I could with that design to condense the disturbance area to reduce the footprint. There are still several retaining walls that are required to help keep it a fairly compact footprint. It will not increase any stormwater discharges to the Bullfrog Valley Pond. Everything will be maintained and controlled on site using infiltration features. So again, you know, very similar design to what was previously presented, but given the changes, I wanted to, you know, bring this before the board and ask for your consideration of approving this modified design. That's really all I have, and happy to answer any questions.
Maybe other board members will have questions as well. So so you talked about reducing the size and footprint. Can you elaborate on what the home size and the whole, obviously there's two things here. One is this overall square footage size, and the other is the footprint size. Can you tell us what that was on the prior request and what it is on this request?
Sure. The home size itself on the prior request was 4,300 square feet, and the current home size is 3,200 square feet. This drawing shows where the proposed retaining walls are denoted in the orange color there. The lower one is really what helps to condense the footprint so that the fill slope doesn't extend further downhill towards the Bullfrog Pond. Footprint, I'm sorry, go ahead.
The retaining wall you're saying is in orange?
Yes.
And is that the currently proposed plan or the prior plan?
This shows both. The green is the currently proposed, and the orange shows the currently proposed location of retaining walls.
Are you saying the retaining walls haven't changed?
No, they have. They have changed. There's less square footage of retaining walls with the current design. This shows the prior design, and there was retaining walls there along the side, which you can see where the contours are very tightly spaced, and they follow along the edge of the roadway.
That entire length there, you're saying?
That's correct.
That David's tracing.
And right around the backside of the home as well. There was an additional retaining wall there. Yeah. So the square footage of retaining walls was reduced by, I don't know, about 50%.
Okay, how about the footprint of the of the home and other, you know, patio area, et cetera, that's shown there? How has that changed in terms of the actual, you know, on the ground footprint as opposed to the square footage of the, you know, floor area?
Yeah, I don't know what the exact square footage of just the footprint itself is of the home. I just know what the overall square footage of the home is. But everything kind of shrunk proportionally, I'll say. So it's about 1,000 square feet less.
Other members have questions?
I was just hoping that maybe the staff could read the current local law or ordinance that we're seeking an exemption from. It seems to me it's helpful to know what the current requirement is. Could you do that for us, David, please? I think it's on page, oh, no, the new one is online.
Well, let me just add to that, Sandy. I think that when we're talking about this new ordinance or change to the ordinance, I believe that only applies to accessory uses for existing homes.
No, I'm not talking about that, Steve. I would just like someone to read sensitive environmental areas.
Okay, great. You're not talking about the change that was made a year or so ago. You're talking about what's in the 2019 ordinance.
Yeah, the current law.
Okay.
If you just read that out loud, because I think it's important we start with what the rule is, and then we're talking about you want an exemption to that rule. So it always helps me to start with the rule. Thank you.
Yes. So this is section 225-401.2.1, sensitive environmental resources, as amended 4/13/2021 by ordinance number 2021-04. Point A. Sensitive.
I think you don't have to read that entire.
I was just going to read A and A point one.
I would just read B if you don't mind. B is the operative part. Section B. Oh, it's not. It might be a new.
It's 8.1. Also goes into land areas having slopes in excess of 20%, which are not the result of man-made changes to the natural terrain when such areas exceeds 200 contiguous square feet.
I believe what we want to hear is Section B.
Okay.
That's the rule. Thank
yes.
you.
Sensitive environmental areas shall not be physically disturbed or used for any other use other than agricultural uses, natural conservation areas, and uses for the conservation of open space, water, soil, and water life resources, except as may be necessary to provide ingress, egress, and regress to a property or to enable utility placement.
Thank you. So that tells us that 20% slopes are sensitive environmental areas, and they're not to be physically disturbed, because one thing that's very important to our community, as evidenced throughout our ordinances and our comprehensive plan, is the environmental security of our area. So those 20% slopes are only to be used for agricultural uses, natural conservation uses, and the conservation of open spaces, water, soil, and wildlife. And as except to necessary to provide ingress and egress to a property or utility placement. And so I believe, David, if that reference is to a driveway, we don't count driveways?
Yes, driveways are not under – the driveways are not included in the variance request.
Okay.
As it is providing ingress and egress to the property.
Thank you. I'd just like to start with the law as it currently exists. And then we are now considering the exception to this rule. Thank you.
Do you have any other questions, Sandy? No. Other board members, questions? Lindsay? Okay. So I have two other questions for you. So you talked about use of a downgradient retaining wall to condense the development footprint. Can you explain what that is, in both in terms of what it is, but also where it is on here relative, and also relative to my prior question about retaining walls and what's changed?
Sure, yeah. So the downgradient side is the side of the property towards the pond there. And the downgradient retaining wall, the primary one is that orange line that David's pointing to right now. So that's about a 10 or 12 foot high retaining wall. So if that were to not exist, then the fill slope would extend down much further and would expand the size of the disturbance footprint.
Okay, that's not a new component versus what you presented previously, though, right? That's just the extent of it has reduced as you previously indicated.
Right.
All right.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And then the other question I have for you. So the other part that I see here is the alignment of the driveway is substantially different. And while, as David just pointed out, that is not part of the variance request, it looks like it's a lot longer and therefore maybe disturbing more area. Is that correct? How much more area is the new driveway alignment disturbing versus the prior driveway?
I don't have the answer to how much more of overall disturbance is created by the driveway alignment, but I would agree that it's greater than what was previously presented. The primary reason for proposing to adjust that location was that the prior one kind of tied in on the bend of that Roseland Road. And it's also fairly steeply sloping along that section. So there was a concern about whether that was an optimum location to tie the driveway in there. It could still be done. And if, you know, the preference of the board was to have the driveway connect there to condense the disturbance area further, I would be okay with that. But it was really more of a safety concern, I guess, with the curvature of the road and the line of sight and the slope, to just bring it down to an area where it was a little flatter.
So the driveway realignment is not related to the change in the amount of retaining wall then?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a question just for clarification to make sure I understand. For the Roseland subdivision that was previously done, was this was one of the lots on there, and it has just not been developed the way the others have?
That's correct.
Since the inception of it, and I think it was 1985 or 1990?
Yes, that's okay. Correct.
And I'll ask another question, sorry. So you mentioned that the first bid came in kind of high, and you asked them to relook at it, and in order to save some cost,
yeah.
I believe is what you said. Knowing that you had this variance and the 20% rule, did you ask them to reduce the 0.4 disturbance to possibly make that smaller? Did you ask them that?
Ask the builders?
Yes.
No, I did not. I developed the grading plan myself, so that's really my work.
And you didn't consider reducing the disturbance?
No, I felt like it was within what was previously approved, so I didn't want to increase the disturbance.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
If there's no more questions from the board, then let me open it up to any members of the public that wish to comment on this case.
I'm just going to ask one more question follow up to
Sandy.
Do you feel that if the disturbance amount understanding that the 1,000 square foot reduction in the structure itself, but if the disturbance area were to proportionately be reduced, would that compromise the integrity of, you know, any of the structures or the development overall?
No, I don't think it would compromise the development. I think the disturbance could be reduced proportionally without any meaningful impact.
Thank you.
Okay, once again, I'll open it up to members of the public. If you wish to comment, please come to the podium. Okay, seeing no one appearing, then we'll close this hearing. And just to let you know, the board has 45 days to render a decision, and you have 30 days thereafter to appeal if you're aggrieved. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, our next item of old business is a continuance in the case of Drury Southwest Incorporated, case number 2021-17. And if I could just have someone from, someone please identify who will be testifying, and if any of you are an attorney and are going to not be testifying but leading others through testimony, please tell us such so we know who to swear in and who we don't need to swear in.
Absolutely.
But if you would bring whoever forward that is going to be testifying.
They'll stand up as I call them. Then
okay, please identify yourself first.
Sure. My name's David Schutte. I'm a partner with the law firm of Troutman Pepper, Hamilton Sanders, LLP. We represent Hershey Trust Company in its capacity as a trustee under the Milton Hershey School Trust. And we are also representing this evening Drury Southwest, Inc. And with me this evening, who will be testifying, is Ken Gall, who's the Director of Real Estate at Hershey Trust Company, Larry Westrick, Dave Albertson, Jim Webb, and Ed Robinson. They're all with Drury Southwest.
Okay. Can I ask you to just pause a second, please? I just want to make sure our court reporter has been able to get all those names. Yes? Okay.
And Bill Fredericks of RGS Associates.
Yeah, I want everyone to come forward so we can swear them in, please, all at once. Is that Are you going to be providing testimony, or are you simply going to be guiding their testimony?
I'm going to be saying things. They're going to confirm that they're correct, and then I'm going to guide them.
Okay, so you're not. So they're providing the testimony.
Correct.
And let me make sure Megan's good with that. Yeah. So we don't need to swear you in, Mr. Schutte. We'll just swear in the other six people. Okay. All right, if you please all raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right.
And before we get started, I have a little zip drive for Dave here. I'll put it down because I'm short. Okay, and for the benefit of the board and your solicitor, put together an exhibit booklet, probably a little thicker than necessary, but it will help guide everybody through the process here and be a nice resource when rendering the decision.
Can someone else give that back?
Yeah. What's that?
Not waste time. Just have somebody else.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's very nice.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. The Subject property issue this evening is Unit F of Hershey West End. Unit F is a 5.19-acre land condominium unit. It was created by the second amended or stated declaration of condominium for the Hershey West End condominium. Hershey Trust Company is the owner of the property, as evidenced by Hershey Trust Company is the fee simple owner of the property, as evidenced by the consolidation deed, which is Exhibit A, Exhibit 1 in the exhibit booklet. And Exhibit 2 is the second amended and restated declaration of condominium, which creates Unit F. And the plats and plans in the declaration show where Unit F is located within the condominium. Hershey West End itself is a 245-acre master planned community which received conditional use approval for the development of a master plan development on January 22nd, 2019 from the Board of Supervisors of Derry Township. And that was granted pursuant to Section 225-501-58A2 of the Derry Township Zoning Ordinance. The entire development area for Hershey West End, including Unit F, which is the subject property this evening, is located in the planned Campus West Zoning District on the Derry Township Zoning Map. The memorandum of conditional use approval was recorded in the Dauphin County Recorder of Deeds office, which has the entire written approval attached to it, and that's in the exhibit booklet as Exhibit 3. The approved West End Master Plan development includes 919 dwelling units of varying types, about 440,000 square feet of non-residential space, which includes retail, including grocery store, restaurant, office, including medical office, and a hotel, which is why we're here this evening. The master plan itself is also recorded in Dauphin County Recorder of Deeds office. Exhibit 4 is page 11 of that approved recorded master plan, and it shows the overall site development for Hershey West End. Currently, Hershey West End is improved with a medical office building known as Hershey Center for Applied Research, the Cocoa Beanery, the U-Grow Child Care and Office Facility, and the recently redeveloped Inglewood Barn, which is a restaurant and live music venue. When developed, Hershey West End will have ample open space and recreation areas, including bike paths. Unit F is located generally in the center of the development, where buildings S and T are located on Exhibit 4. The master plan designates this area as the hotel use with accessory parking. Within a year after the master plan was developed, Hershey Trust Company, as the owner of the property, entered into negotiations with Drury Southwest to discuss the terms of a ground lease for Unit F for the development of the hotel. During those negotiations, the COVID pandemic started, which caused many in the hospitality industry to reconsider size, shape, and function of hotel buildings. But ultimately, Drury Southwest and Hershey Trust Company finalized and executed the lease dated November 15, 2021. And that is the lease is included as Exhibit 5, but it has the economic terms redacted. The lease contemplates that Drury will develop Unit F with a 184-room hotel with a conference and meeting room no greater than 5,000 square feet. Despite this somewhat complicated history, the applicants are here this evening for the board to present two relatively simple variances. First is a variance from Section 225-501-58A-7D, Romanette 3, which states that non-residential and mixed-use buildings shall be built to a height of no greater than 65 feet. The applicants are requesting a maximum height of the hotel building to be 75 feet, as building height is defined in the zoning ordinance as being measured from the finished grade at the building base. But subject to the plans and descriptions we're showing to you this evening. It's important to note here that the roof slab is intended to be at 65 feet 6 inches, and the height variances being requested are for the most part for mechanical equipment and the parapet wall that will surround the mechanical equipment, which will be on the roof of the building, as well as the stairwell exits. And secondly, the applicants are requesting, if the first variance is granted, a variance from section 225.1007.9C to allow for up to 2 years in order to receive a building permit after the variance is granted. The justification for these requests we provide through the evidence and testimony and legal argument provided throughout the hearing this evening. The witness you hear from is Ken Gall to provide a little bit more history on the Hershey West End development, Larry Westrich to introduce you to Southwest, Drury Southwest and its business model and the reasons for the hotel variances, Bill Fredericks also to discuss the site plan and the hotel development, and Dave Albertson to discuss the architectural elements of the proposed parapet wall and stairwell exits, which will extend above the 65 feet 6 inches. My first witness is Ken Gall. Ken, can you state your name, title, and employer?
Sure. My name's Kenneth Gall, Director of Real Estate with Hershey Trust Company, GALL.
And I'm sorry, Ken, can I interrupt with just a point of order, so to speak? I'm looking at the OneDrive and the application, and I only see a request for one variance.
The second variance is in...
Is that in the application itself?
Through...
It's in the narrative.
Height for principal, I don't see it. I only see the one referring to height.
This was a point of conversation between staff and Megan Hoff regarding... whether it is a variance for a time, reading through the ordinance, it mentions that a special exception is required to grant a time extension for a special exception. However, the ordinance is not specific that a variance is required for an extension of time.
For a variance. So I guess I raised this point, and as we advertised this, we advertised one variance.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if it's legal to address two variances when only one was it.
Yes, under the ordinance, because the ordinance doesn't specifically reference a variance for an extension of time. We did not reference that they're asking for that variance, but we did advertise that they are requesting the relief of an extension from 1 year to 2 years. So
well,
it is
that
properly
was in the advertisement.
It was. It
oh,
was
good.
Properly
okay.
advertised and
it was advertised.
It
good.
Is in their narrative.
So it's not a variance.
It's not a variance, it's a request.
It's not a variance, it's a request. So you're asking for one variance
as
and you're requesting
one and one
requesting
request, whatever that
more
is.
More time.
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure it was in the advertisement. Okay.
It was, yes.
Okay. Excellent.
It sounds like we're all clear on that. All right, go ahead. Please continue. David?
Yeah. Ken, can you please confirm that the factual history that I provided of the Hershey West End development is true and correct?
Yes, it is. The only thing I would correct, David, is that the owner of the property is Hershey Trust Company as trustee for the Milton Hershey School Trust, not Hershey Trust Company.
And that's reflected in the deed that's attached in the exhibit booklet, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And can you elaborate on originally when the site plan was done in the master plan process, it showed kind of a convention center hotel design. Why the change to this site plan now?
I think, you know, first of all, master plan, you know, by definition, we were doing our best, knowing the market conditions at the time, to lay out, you know, what the different uses would exactly be and look like. It's a master plan and market, I think, you know, particularly, you know, with the market in the hospitality industry changed what folks are looking for and what the market would bear. We originally had a hotel with a 20,000 square foot conference room that, due to market conditions and this user in particular, we have switched to the 185 units with a much smaller conference center. The one thing we can tell you is that the traffic impact and the parking, there's not very little difference. When you add the rooms and you subtract the conference space, the traffic and parking end up being very, very close.
Okay. And with the requested variance, requests a total height of 75 feet, and that would just be the stair towers, which we'll discuss later. Would that be inconsistent with the remaining development?
Absolutely, and you know, in particular, when we went through the master planning process, the uses that were going to be higher in nature are down along the 322 and along West End, what we call West End Avenue, intentionally just to reduce any impact on the neighborhood above here, and you know the buildings around this property. What we still call the HCAR building, while it's only a three-story building, it's a research building, so the distance is that each floor is much higher. So it seems like six floors versus three floors, it doesn't compute. This building's not going to be, it's going to be very similar in height to the adjacent property, and if you include the Med Center, it's lower in height than the Med Center property.
Just to confirm, the question was, will it be inconsistent? And you said absolutely. So no. It would be consistent.
It would
correct?
Be consistent.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. Thank you thank much. You. Okay, and then would the height of this building being at 75 feet, being the total height, would it be a detriment to the health, safety, welfare, or property values of any of the neighboring properties?
We actually think that, you know, it's consistent with the master plan, and if you look at this project as a neighboring properties, we believe that it enhances the prospect for the other users in the property, particularly when you start getting into the retail. There's an existing Inglewood facility there that I'm hoping everybody has been to that we think will benefit quite, you know, with the 185 room hotel next door, it should benefit quite well from this project.
And as part of the master plan approval process, there was also a pattern book. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and the hotel, while we'll see some elevations of it this evening that have not been through the scrutiny of the pattern book, every building within the development must be consistent with what we call the pattern book.
That's correct, and that pattern book will you know, primarily based on what building materials will be used within the project, and just what we're trying to avoid is, you know, something that looks all the same yet enhance, you know, that there's quality throughout the project, particularly in building materials.
Okay. One of the concerns always with a building height is safety with respect to emergency services and first responders. Have you had an opportunity to talk to the fire chief of Derry Township about this?
Yes, I spoke with Chief Leonard today. You know, first of all, Derry Township's ladder truck is 100 feet, so it's well within, you know, well within what the ladder truck will reach. He also, when describing the building to him, he thought it was a positive that the stair towers would allow for a door on top of the stair towers in the event that there was a fire on the rooftop or they needed to gain access to the rooftop. So their normal attack on a fire would be to go into the stair towers and go up through those stair towers. There's the connections for their hoses inside those stair towers. And then when they get to the top, they're not having to crawl through a manhole or a lid. They could go straight out their door. So he thought that was an enhancement in terms of actually being able to fight the fire.
Okay. I have no further questions for Mr. Gall. I don't know if the board would like to present questions to Mr. Gall now or if after all the testimony has been provided, ask questions.
Well, I think we'll stop and ask questions, but we may also have questions after others testify, too. So we'll...
Excellent.
We'll first check in with the board members. Any questions for Mr. Gall?
The stairway, then, that makes up... Without that, you're looking at, 69 feet at the top of the roof, I believe.
I'll defer to the engineer. Yeah.
There will be more testimony on that from architects and engineers, yeah.
I just want to make sure I'm clear. Room count. Give me that number again, please, and can you refer which page in this exhibit book you gave
sure.
us? That's on?
It's 184.
Okay, I heard you say 184 and you say 185.
It's 184, and that is in the definition of hotel in the lease.
Okay, what page is that on, please, in this
that
book?
That is Exhibit 5.
Yeah, I know, but that's many pages here, and I want to listen to you and not flip pages all night. So.
Yeah. That's in Exhibit 5. And page number 5.
Page 5?
5 of Exhibit 5.
Excellent.
Okay, and then same question for the conference meeting room facilities, please.
That same answer.
Page
184?
184 lodging rooms and a conference meeting room no greater than 5,000 square feet.
Got it. Both on page 5. 5,000. Okay.
Got it.
Thank you. Any other questions from the board members?
I have a question, if I could, please. Refer to stair towers that project above the 65 feet permitted. Is that a required design element by code, or is that just, or are there other ways to achieve the same goal as far as access?
That may be a better question for the architect.
Is he here?
Yes. He'll be giving later testimony.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he can answer it now.
Yes, it is a requirement.
Could you
code.
State your name?
My name's Dave Alverson. I'm an architect for Greater Southwest. Code does require access to the roof, whether it be through a hatch or through a stair. The stair, in our opinion, is a much safer way to do that. I've crawled through those hatches, and I can't imagine doing it in a full rig and hauling hoses up through there. So it's a typical design element.
Okay. All right. So there are other ways to achieve the goal, but it's more effective with the stair tower.
Safer. Yes.
Thank you.
If there's other questions from the board members, then we'll go on with your next.
I'm here for.
Please don't go away because we may have other questions after we hear from others. So,
okay. Next witness is Larry Westrich.
Sir, could you spell your name for the record?
Yes, first name L A R R Y, last name W E S T R I C H.
And maybe please also identify what your role is early on here. So,
yeah, my name is Larry Westrich, but I'm Senior Vice President with Drury Southwest Corporation. I'm in charge of real estate development and all non-hotel property management.
Okay. And many of us are not familiar with Drury Hotels. So give a very short summary of the history of Drury Hotels and its nationwide operations.
Drury Southwest is a family begun corporation, started back in the 1950s, 1960s. We started out as a construction company. The four owners, four brothers, were plastering and went around and did plastering construction work and were well known in the majority of the Midwest with a lot of public buildings and so on and so forth. Excuse me. By the 1960s, we started then developing and constructing hotels. We got into commercial real estate. We got into office buildings. We got into retail space. We got into a wide variety of residential developments. But right now, our main thrust of development is over about over 130 hotels stretching throughout the Midwest. We're located in 28 different states. We go from Michigan to Texas. We go from the Carolinas out to Arizona and a lot of places in between. We're not in the far northeast, and we're not in the far west at this point. But that is our geographic location. Our company is a very lineal company. Our owners started that years ago. Basically, our company starts from the ground up. Myself is in charge of all the real estate for our company. We have a real estate department. I have a legal department that works with me hand in hand throughout the process. We have our own development company that goes from city to city and puts all of our plans through the building process. We have our own architectural department, which we'll meet some of them tonight, design all of our own hotels and make sure we stay on top of all the most recent codes. We also have our own structural engineers on board in-house. We have our own mechanical engineers in-house. We do our own construction management. When we are building our hotel, it will be a Drury Southwest employee here on site, along with myself and two or three other people that will be visiting the site all the time during construction. On top of that, we also build all of our own furniture for our hotels. All of our own wooden millwork is built in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, and then shipped out to all of our new hotels. We have our own supply company, which buys and buys, coordinates, and then ships out to the hotel construction sites and all of our operations of our hotels. Each hotel, when you have a hotel like this, last thing you want is your manager worried about salesmen, shipments, anything like that. So once a month, every hotel gets one semi-truck load. Semi-truck pulls into the hotel at night. We have employees go out. We unload the semi. Everything is on that semi to operate that hotel for the next year, except for perishable items such as food. Sorry. Apologize. But basically, everything is on that semi except for the perishable items required for our food service side of the hotel. Right now, we've just received our 16th J.D. Power Awards in a row. We compete with hotel chains such as Holiday Express, Holiday Inn, Courtyard by Marriott, Hyatt Place, and Hampton Inn. Says quite a bit for a small company of about 130 hotels versus hotels with companies with over 1,000 units each. That's an overall look at our hotel company.
Good. Very good. Were you involved in the negotiations of the lease for this property?
Yes, sir. We started back in late 2019. Ken Gall and myself have been on the phone quite a bit over the last 3 years, along with yourself, negotiating the lease.
And what attracted Drury to the Hershey West End development?
Hershey West End, Drury Hotels exceeds and excels in our leisure traveler, especially over the last 2 years. The pandemic has really taken a hard hit on the business traveler. But Drury Hotels has managed to come through in a pretty good position, primarily because we are stronger than our competitors in the leisure traveler. We, because of the J.D. Powers, we offer and we receive a lot of customer satisfaction, value for our guests, and so we exceed in that. Looking at the Hershey tourism with the Hershey parks, the sports coming into town throughout the state, and all the other tourism located with this, along with the Harrisburg governmental and political side, this was a natural for us to come look at.
Okay, and now how did, in the lease, as I just mentioned, the lease identifies the hotel as having 184 guest rooms and 5,000 or up to 5,000 square feet of meeting and conference room space. How did those numbers come to be?
We've been in the hotel business going on 50 years this year. with our hotel company that we own and manage. This is the most feasible and the best size hotel that we can develop and operate with the staff to keep our customers satisfied and give them what they need with the food service we have, with all of our other amenities we offer our customers.
Okay. And did Drury engage RGS Associates to prepare the site plan and provide civil engineering services for this project?
Yes, we did.
Okay. And did Drury provide its own internal architectural service for this plan?
That's right. All architecture is done by our in-house personnel.
Okay. I have no further questions for Mr. Westrich. The board may have some, keeping in mind that you will have a civil engineer and an architect testifying as your next two witnesses.
Any questions, board members?
Not this time.
No. Okay. Keep going.
Okay. Next witness is Bill Fredericks.
William Fredericks, W-I-L-L-I-A-N, Fredericks, F-R-E-D-E-R-I-C-K-S. I work at RGS Associates, and I am a professional engineer registered in the state of Pennsylvania.
Okay. And for how many years have you been at RGS?
13.
And did you lead the team that prepared the West End master plan and subsequent land development plans related to that?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Subsequent master or land development plans would be associated with the Englewood Barn, which was concurrent with the master plan, as well as a parking lot expansion for the existing H-Car building on site and the streets and infrastructure plan, which is currently being constructed on the site.
And you also prepared the site, or are in the process of preparing the site plan and subsequently the land development plan for the Drury Hotel?
Correct.
Okay. And what were some of the considerations you put into preparing this plan?
First and foremost is parking associated with the use. We have to make sure it's parked for the use that it is, as well as site layout. You have West End Ave. Forget the street name. I believe it's actually what's called Street B at the time.
Yeah, I'm having a little trouble hearing you too.
So. I apologize. You're constrained by West End to the north on this plan, as well as the side street to the right. So access onto those streets, associated parking, and walkways associated with the building itself.
And with respect to parking, am I correct that the entire West End development has a shared parking concept within it?
Yes, it does.
And I'll also state to the board that within the condominium declaration, there's also parking easements shared between every unit. So what parking is allowed on one unit is permitted to have parking on another unit. As far as topography goes on the property, is the hotel property, Unit F, that we're developing here, is that the low point of the West End development?
Yes, it's a relative low point of the site.
Is there another exhibit? We have a preliminary grading exhibit in the PDFs that I provided. Would that be helpful? Yep. And then there's the other exhibit that you prepared.
Yeah, do you want to open the other one?
There's another exhibit which is also exhibit 10 in our booklet. It's the one that says that one. No, that's not it. The wrong one. I'm sorry. It's exhibit 10 in the booklet. We don't have it for the screen. I'll show it to you right here.
Dave, do you have the overall one?
Yeah. The
overall site.
The overall site plan would be in the
That's perfect, right there.
Okay, yep.
So it's a relative low point of the site. The associated grading to the east and west of the building is slightly higher. So if we look at, it's hard to read on that one. If you look at this building here, it's approximately 430 as an elevation. Our hotel building is at a, say building C is approximately 430. Our unit F is approximately 411. As you go north or south on the site, towards Wood Road increases in elevation. I think the high point of Wood Road is north of 500 elevation. So our elevation here is 411. Wood Road is north of 500. So it is a relative low point of the site. As you go towards the roundabout to the left, it does start to dip. That's another relative low point associated over there. So you start at 411, you go to a peak point kind of in the middle around 430, and then as you get to the roundabout, you go back down to approximately 410 in terms of elevations.
And compared to the original master plan depiction with the larger building, the larger buildings S&T and the parking field, are there advantages to the new layout that has been that's being proposed?
Yep. So actually, David, I'll ask you to flip back and forth between those two plans. So if you go to the first one, again, commonly referred to as Unit F in the condo plan, as you can see, the outline, it's approximately 5 acres, and on the initial contemplated master plan, it was pretty packed out with parking and associated impervious area. So it was pretty close to at capacity of impervious for that site. David, I'll ask you to flip back to that site plan again. Apologize. This one, if you zoom out just a hair, scroll down a tad, the new footprint introduces additional green space, open space within this condo itself. So this contemplation of a plan takes up approximately 4 acres of the 5-acre site. So you're not maxing out all 5 acres of the condo unit. There's approximately an additional 1 acre of open space area. I apologize, actually, flip back to the other one. As we look at that, you can see the open space associated with this park. This was contemplated within the master plan. There's an existing tree grove right here that is to remain undisturbed and incorporated into the site, and a park amenity associated with that. It is contemplated that the additional area open space would be incorporated into the park area. As you can see, there's already a walking bike path contemplated along the sidewalks and connected throughout the site to promote the walkability that West End does. So that would be incorporated within the open space. In addition to that, an increase in impervious creates additional stormwater runoff and stormwater pollutants, nitrates, sediments, those types of things. We do the best we can with stormwater facilities. We try to mimic nature and recreate that in a stormwater facility, but nature does it best. In an open space condition, it would certainly be contemplated to be planted in a meadow or additional trees, landscaping. Again, incorporated within the open space and park area. But those types of things, one, help reduce pollutants by not having the increase in impervious, and two, help filter those pollutants out with a natural setting.
And flip back to the other one here. With the new layout, does it also eliminate a little bit of a conflict between the walking bike path and the commercial use of the hotel by separating them?
Correct. And there's existing drainage features to be contemplated within this section. Within the parking lot that was recently built within the H-car does discharge some storm water. The existing parking lot that was built within the H-car system does discharge storm water currently across this unit. That needs to be contemplated and rerouted. So part of the open space would accommodate that stormwater aspect.
And Mr. Gull had mentioned earlier that the parking, when you change the hotel use from the earlier contemplated use on the master plan to the current proposal, that the parking is basically a wash. Is that correct in your opinion, too?
Correct. Yep. The parking still complies with the shared parking within the master plan approval.
Okay. Could you give us those numbers before and after, please?
I can look at them when I sit back. I don't have them off the top of my head. I apologize.
And I have no further questions for Mr. Fredericks.
I have a question. Do you have a reference, the existing structure that is on the plan noted as the U-Grow buildings? Do you have a comparison from the ground elevation of this proposed site versus there?
So it's approximately the same elevation as the contemplated hotel. So they're both approximately 410, 411-ish. I believe U-Grow is a two-story building with roof structure above. Not a typical two-story. There's, you know, floor to floor. I don't know the exact height.
Okay. Thank you. Just trying to get lay of the land and where the changes occur.
I don't know if it's the right time to ask or if you're the right person, but is there five floors on this? Is that what it looks like?
I'm sorry. I'll let the architect answer that.
Yeah.
I apologize.
I guess what I was getting at is, you know, what we're talking about here is a height variance, and one of the questions is going to be, like, what are the other options you could have come up with? And it's going to be you could go up or you could go out. And you mentioned that you're saving approximately an acre of green space from the old to the existing. Just hypothetically, if you were to go out instead of up, how much green space would you be, you know, would we be encroaching into? Is that something that was... We don't know.
So, direct answer, I don't know off the top of my head. I will say we'll probably go pretty close to that whole acres. Just by the time you start, the issue with when you start spreading out a building, the architect can talk to this better, is just travel distances, exits. So it's not just chopping off and adding on the end. You have to spread the building out a little bit further.
So it'd be almost back to where the original.
It would probably look similar.
Roughly.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
If I may, just for my own clarity, clarification, the number of parking spaces on the site, not including anything on the streets, does that meet the requirements by Derrick Township currently?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
And for parking, the parking has been approved through the master plan for the development as a whole, as it gets developed through the phases. So there's a parking matrix on the master plan that demonstrates and approves the parking counts, and this would have the same number of parking counts necessary under that parking matrix. And Bill's going to sit down and figure that all out while we talk to the architect.
Okay, I understand that, and I appreciate that. My concern is that we're sizing the parking spaces properly so that some of the guests are not required to park on the street.
Correct.
Okay, right. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
I have a couple questions for you. Okay, so you're talking about 5 acres versus 4 acres, is that correct?
Approximately, yes.
Well, approximately what? 4.2, 4.4?
So it's approximately, the unit, Dave, how big is the unit? It's 5.1. 5.19 acres.
Okay.
So if I look at a development area, including grading, you're looking at 4 acres. So approximately 1 acre.
Are we talking impervious? Are we talking about, disturbed?
So the open space would be disturbed as well, but then set to a natural setting.
Right. So I guess I'm just trying to get clarity. That's all, you know, right now. So I'm not clear about how much disturbed area in the anticipated by the master plan layout versus how much disturbed area in what's being proposed.
So
how much, let me finish, please. How much impervious, again, comparing the two, what the footprint of the hotel building is and the footprint of the conference center is, again, compared to what was in the master plan. And we need some clarity on that, as well as number of parking spaces. So,
sure.
Please.
Well, I'll let the architect answer the building footprint question.
Okay.
The disturbance area associated with the hotel would go from approximately 5 acres to approximately 4 acres. The whole area would still be disturbed to create that open space, park space,
mm-hmm.
But the area directly associated with it. The impervious area, I need to go look at one of my exhibits to get you a more defined answer
okay.
on that.
Okay, great. Okay.
So you have it up.
Do you have the plan?
Footprint you're going to pass to the architect.
Yeah,
the building footprint on the master plan for TNS?
I can pull that.
Okay, cool.
I have it on the cover.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we'll wait, but like answers to those. Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Frederick? Okay, continue on then, please. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I have one more question. Talked about low points and elevations. So I see a number of retention ponds and so on here. I'm assuming those are lower elevation than where the hotel is?
That is correct.
So relative is relative to other structures. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. How about the elevation on 322? How does that compare directly out from the hotel?
10. Sure. 322, if you go, let's say, directly
just
north.
Just directly north from,
yep,
from the building.
That's approximately 405.
So that's actually lower.
Slightly lower.
Thank you.
As you go further east and west, it changes, obviously, elevation.
And how about from Bullfrog Valley Road?
That elevation... where Wood Road and Bullfrog Valley meet is approximately 435 as a relative elevation. At the site across from the Med Center, at that intersection, it's approximately 400.
400 at the intersection of what will be West End Avenue?
Correct.
So again, slightly lower.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
And then Exhibit 10 in the exhibit booklet also identifies some other elevations, in particular the elevation of the Med Center, which is the other tall building nearby.
I'm sorry, the elevation of what?
The Hershey Medical Center, which is the other tall building within the vicinity.
Right.
Not on this site.
It's not on this site, correct. Correct.
Okay, thank you.
And then... our final witness is Dave Albertson.
Well, I'm Dave Albertson, D-A-V-I-D-A-L-B-E-R-S-O-N. I'm Vice President of Architecture and Design for Drury Southwest. I've been an architect for 40 years, 24 of those with Drury. I'm currently licensed in Pennsylvania and 24 other states.
And what are your responsibilities with Drury?
Oversee the design of all the hotels and commercial buildings that Drury Southwest develops. And then I coordinate with our department with development, legal, operations, engineering departments of the company.
And on the board here and attached in the our exhibit booklet as Exhibit 7 are some renderings of the elevations of the buildings. It's, I think, 4 or 5 pages. And these renderings are really only for the purpose of showing the building height and roof areas in the parapet wall and stairwells. Can you just give us a quick description of some of the considerations, architectural considerations you put into preparing these?
Typically for a hotel this number of rooms, we would build a 7-story hotel. Our proposed one here, we've taken a story off, 6 stories, that gives the same number of rooms. That extended our typical building by about 40 feet, but we were still, what you saw on the site plan, keeping our building to that distance still enabled us to only use part of the site, leaving that acre that was in discussion. The six stories, it addresses several issues, mostly what to do with the health, safety, welfare of our guests. Rather than spreading it out, it condenses the building for travel distance, security, accessibility. It's, like we talked about, it leaves more green space on the site for environmental concerns, and it's, Larry mentioned
we've learned over the years through best practices, six or seven story buildings are our most efficient model for this number of rooms.
Okay. And what is the height of the roof slab?
To the top of the roof is 65 feet.
And
from finished floor, and then the 6 inches of grade drop. So the total height would be 65 feet, 6 inches to the top of roof slab.
So just to be clear for this board, the exhibit 7, the numbers on exhibit 7 are from the finished floor, which is 6, and there's a 6-inch difference between the finished grade and the finished floor. So as we mentioned earlier, that the roof slab, as defined under the zoning ordinance, is 65 feet, 6 inches, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then describe the 4-foot parapet wall.
Okay. Most of the parapet height around the building is 4 feet, which addresses the code and OSHA requirements of fall protection around the edge of the building from the roof. And that 4 feet makes up, I believe it was...
Can you turn to the calculations exhibit, which is...
64% of the perimeter of the building's at that 4%. The 4%, the 4-foot parapet makes up 64% of the perimeter of the building.
And we're showing to you the... Exhibit 9 in the exhibit booklet. And this is true and correct, and this is increased from 65 feet, in excess of 65 feet, for the parapet wall, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Hold on. Come back to that, please.
And then... And then just to be clear, again, these measurements are from the finished floor, and add 6 inches to each of the, that the 4-foot parapet wall is 4 feet above, for under the ordinance, it would be 65 feet, 6 inches, so that would be 4 feet above the 65 foot, 6 inch, top, but I guess the other legend on the bottom corner is, I think, more important to what Dave is discussing here, and that is that the if you want to go on that to describe what that means.
Okay, so like I said, the 4 feet represents 64% of the perimeter. The 5-foot height makes up 6%. The 6 feet, 6%, 7 feet, 7%, and our highest parapet at 9'6" makes up 17% of the perimeter of the building.
And the 9.6, that is for the exit stairwells?
I'm going to ask Jim Webb, our project architect. Is that the highest point?
Jim, come on up here and introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Jim Webb. J-I-M-W-E-B-B. I'm an architect with Drury Southwest. I've been licensed as an architect for 24 years, and I've worked with Dave for about 6 years at Drury Southwest. So Dave and I worked in conjunction to develop the plans you're seeing here. So what we're saying is that the parapets are minimal, but the exit stairway, which represents the 17% or the 9'6" that we're seeing in this diagram, are... 9'6", yes. Yeah. That's the components of that are the highest features on the rooftop that we're looking at.
And then 9'6" is due to the structure to raise that stairwell to get roof access and keep clearances.
So you're saying that 9'6", which is really 10 feet, that you're asking for, right, with the 6 inches
and
to grade.
Yes.
So 10 feet from a variance standpoint applies only to the stairwells?
That is correct.
Okay. The front central part of the building, what is that height?
7 feet.
I'm looking at your drawing here in Exhibit 7. And it looks...
So the variance number that is 7 feet 6 inches.
Okay, thank you. Is that the only area that's 7 foot 6 inches higher?
That is correct. That is the entry portion, the front middle there in purple on your diagram.
Okay.
Wait, I'm confused now. I thought you said the only two parts of the stairway, but it's also...
That are 10 feet. These are 10 feet.
And this is 7.
And this is 7.5.
And none of the other displayed items are over 65 feet?
I'm just working 69. My way down their table, Sandy.
Okay.
10, 9, 6, which is really 10, 7, which is really 7.5. And then you've got, what's the next one there?
The elevator is listed.
What's the next one you have?
The elevator penthouse is 8'6" above roof slab.
The elevator is what?
The elevator overhead penthouse is 8'6" above the roof slab.
The elevator.
Elevator.
It's not on the list.
Oh, okay. It's not shown there.
The hands over top of it.
And the penthouse is a loud exception, height exception.
Where's the penthouse on this picture?
It's the elevator.
The elevator is the penthouse?
The elevator shaft's penthouse.
Oh.
Where the machinery's located.
Okay, that's called a penthouse.
Yes.
Yes.
With a P.
P.
Oh.
Yes.
I thought it was like a penthouse.
A penthouse is a permitted exception to the height requirements under your ordinance.
An equipment penthouse.
Yes.
As opposed to what Sandy's envisioning.
Yes, thank you.
or the magazine.
Okay,
she's envisioning a very glamorous room, right. I think.
Got it now.
And then if you want to keep going, the six-foot-high parapet wall.
Let's see. The back, that represents where the back entrance is. That is the 6 foot. And those two highest parapets that we're showing are essentially screening the highest rooftop equipment that we have on the roof.
And then for variance purposes, that is 6 feet 6 inches above the grade, or above 65 feet above the grade,
right.
And then the remainder is the 4 foot parapet. And is it your understanding that there's OSHA regulations that would require a 4 foot parapet or a 4 foot wall or some other barrier if there are employees on the rooftop working on mechanical equipment?
Yes, the OSHA regulations and the building codes require fall protection around the edge of the roof.
And the articulations in the parapet between the 4 foot and the 7 feet and the 9'6" above the roof slab, are they consistent with Drury design standards?
Yes. Our standards and to meet the standards of the pattern book, which calls for building articulation and varying heights on the facade of the buildings, just to break it up in and out and up and down.
Okay. I don't believe I have further questions for Mr. Alberson. Does the board have any questions for Mr. Alberson?
I just have one question. It's more of a curiosity. You mentioned that...
I just have one question. It's more of a curiosity. You mentioned that one of the reasons that, again, going up instead of out is a safety issue. How so? I don't understand that.
Build out, extending that footprint, you're increasing travel distances for exits, for accessibility through the hotel amenities.
Okay.
Our guests walking through parking lots, our best practices, we try to keep that within 200 feet from the farthest from this point of the parking lot to our front door.
Okay, makes sense. All right, thanks. Yeah.
It's interesting to know, and I didn't think about it until Dave did the calculations, but when we took one floor off, it increased it by, what was it, Dave?
40 feet.
40 feet, but when you take that next floor off,
almost 100 feet.
Yes, it jumps way out there. So now our parking lot distances to get someone to a door, to get them safe, it's starting to grow exponentially to get them out of the building in the event of something that's, you know, just... So that's kind of how we ended where we did. We dropped the floor and then reevaluated kind of the safety issue and said, what, you know, what's going to be best here for the community and for our guests.
And can you speak to considerations that were given to be within that 65 feet and if it's just completely economically not feasible, if you were to, you know, reduce the room count and meet the height requirements, would this project not be able to take place?
Well, Larry can jump in with this, but that 180, 185 model, like we've discussed, is the most efficient, and we have found it's the best scenario to achieve the ROI on the investments. Like I said, as you start spreading out and shortening it, it increases cost and time, takes up more site. And then we usually were on a 3-acre site.
Sure.
You know, our typical. So that's where that comes from.
To piggyback on that, it would also be feasible to drop the stair towers, but we felt that the safety in accessing that roof was really important. It was worth talking about and making a point about. So our highest point is for a safety reason primarily, and it also marks the entry of the end of the building, and it's a design point. So there's many things that roll into that. Cost is, of course, a big one, but another one is safety and getting to the roof, and as we exhibited in that plan, the tallest concern is the fire tower to get up to the roof.
Thank you. I guess I'm going to just try to simplify this, and I know there's so much information here, but one of the things I'm always interested and curious to hear is if this variance of the 10 feet were not granted, is this design not able to be achieved in a way that would satisfy all other requirements, you know, and what you're looking to do?
Well, we can meet the 65-foot limit with our six-story hotel, but it'd be without the parapets, without the stair tower. We still have the elevator tower. But we're not going to be able to meet the design standards of the pattern book that we're working with. Now, if we take it, say, go down another floor, like I said, you're adding 100 feet to our standard building.
So you believe that this is the absolute least amount of relief?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, right. Is this on?
Yes.
Okay. So you're saying if you were to build a hotel with less room, less rooms or less conference space, you would still be able to, but you just wouldn't make as much money?
I don't know if we'll make as much money or less money or more, depending on vacancy rates and that sort of thing. But for our performers that we run based on this model to achieve the ROIs that are quoted us from our board members, it would be difficult to do.
Thank you.
See, and I just add to that, too, in terms of lowering the number of rooms, and from a project standpoint, part of the concept of, you know, creating a village or town is the customers that would be in the hotel, you know, and you start cutting that, and it starts changing the concept of the project as a whole.
So I have a few more questions. One that I asked earlier, then was told the architect would answer, and that is building footprint. What is the building footprint for the proposed building versus the previous building, and if you can please break that down in terms of the conference center versus the hotel. Bill, and also impervious. We'll come back to your other.
Bill can give you the before of the building footprint.
The before is 24,075 square feet of conference, 18,200 of a footprint for the hotel.
18,200?
Correct.
And 24,000? 75.
So that's the...
That's the square footage on the, basically on the
on
ground.
On the ground.
Of the building.
Correct.
Not any of the other parking and other impervious.
That's
and you
correct.
Add those two numbers together.
Yep.
Okay.
It would be 42,275.
Thank you.
42,275. Okay. And then proposed?
Proposed building has a footprint of 16,500 square feet.
16,500 square feet total. That's both the hotel rooms and the conference facilities?
The hotel footprint, the building footprint.
Okay. And where are the? Where is this 5,000 square feet or up to 5,000 square feet of conference facilities? Where in the structure is that located?
But right now, it was, I think, 5,000 maximum.
Yes.
Right now, within that footprint, we have, I believe it's 2,200 square feet of meeting space.
And that, and where is that, in the first
That's
floor?
Within that footprint on first floor.
2,200, you said?
Yes.
Okay. And then impervious, do you have that number now?
So existing impervious, we were, I'm still going to use approximate because they're large number, they're acres, but it's 4.15 acres of impervious. The proposed condition plan that you see before you is about 2.89 acres.
And that includes all the parking?
That's correct.
Okay. And then as far as number of parking spaces provided within this plan area, how many parking spaces before and how many parking spaces now?
So previously it was 199 on the master plan. This plan is 186.
So you have fewer parking spaces.
Correct.
Basically one space per room, guest room. One space per guest room.
Right. Okay. But within that footprint, it's less parking.
Correct.
So that accounts for part of the difference in impervious area.
Correct.
Okay. All right. I don't want to hog the floor here, but I have other questions, but I'm going to let other board members.
You go first. Finish your.
Mine are a little more involved, so go ahead, Tom.
Okay. I just have a general question that relates to if, hypothetically, you took one story off the building. I think you mentioned you'd have to have the same number of rooms and same square footage. You have to add 40 feet to the end of the building.
No. We've added 40 foot to our standard prototype when we took the seventh floor off. That added three bays to the footprint. Now, if you take another floor off, that's 18, nine more bays of rooms to the length of the building, which increased it about 100 feet. So right now, this one is 233 feet, I think. If we took a floor off and added those required bays to keep the same number of rooms, the building would be 100 feet longer.
So the overall length of that building proposed there is, what, 230 roughly feet? So you'd say 100 feet further to take one floor off?
Yeah, because you're adding, you're having to make up for 31 rooms.
Can you clarify whether that 100 feet is additive with the 40 feet? So is it 140 feet longer than the seven-story, or is it 100 feet longer than the seven-story to go from seven to five? In other words, is it 40 and 60?
The 40 feet is from seven to six.
Six.
Quarters.
And how much more than from six
from
to
six
five?
Six to five, it's another 100.
It's another 100.
So between seven and five is 140. Gotcha.
You're essentially adding 10, 11 bays to
you
make
say
up that room count.
Bays, you're talking about rooms per floor?
Foot bays for the room. The room is 13
okay.
feet.
So, okay. Tom, you have more questions? Or?
No, I'm good. Thank you for now.
Anyone else? Okay, so two more questions, and these aren't just necessarily for you. Mr. Gall, you may be the one that needs to answer some of these. So let's talk about the pattern book, because you've mentioned the pattern book as a reason for needing the height variance. Can you please show us what elements of the pattern book require you to do what you're doing and what was originally anticipated in the master plan in the pattern book? And David, maybe we need to bring up the pattern book.
Pattern book is not in the exhibit booklet. It's a document with the township.
Right. It's part of the master plan. It's
part of the master approval, plan
approval, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Is it online somewhere that David could pull it up?
I don't know if it's online. No.
Yeah, it's a very extensive document. Yeah. But the main point is, Steve, is the, you know, articulation of, you know, moving in and out in terms of the building, you know, going horizontally, and then when you get to the, you know, that it just doesn't look like a standard hotel with, you know, that there's articulation and differences in heights as you're going, you know.
Right. I'd like to see it, and I'd like the other board members to see it, though. I don't want, you know.
I don't think we can.
David, don't you have access to the pattern book?
I do not have it on this computer, no. I can run downstairs and load it to a USB drive.
While you're asking questions, I may be able to get to the.
I think it's important. Yeah. I mean, it's part of your. It's part of your. While you're saying you need the relief, so I think we need to understand what the pattern book requires versus what you're proposing.
Right, and there's a section of the pattern book related to hotels, and that does require for hotels to have articulation in both the facade as well as the roof.
Right. Line. Okay. Well, let me ask another question. Maybe while David. You know, can we go get that, please?
Well, Ken's looking for it right now.
Okay. Great. But we can answer some other questions while we're waiting, if we're waiting. So I want to keep things moving along, but I want the information. So what was approved with the master plan in terms of how many rooms and how many stories to a hotel?
The stories for the hotel was not part of the master plan approval. Master plan approval did have, as far as room count goes,
really?
140 for rooms, and I believe it was 25,000 square feet of 24,000 square feet of conference room area.
Do you want to check that?
I just
75 conference.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the 24,000. That's how many stories of a how many story hotel was part of the master plan? I believe it's on the cover sheet of the plans.
I don't think there's a story count on the cover sheet of the master plan. I believe it just said 140 rooms.
Okay, let's.
We can double check that.
Yeah.
I've given you an opportunity to present the correct information here. So.
It says, oh, I'm sorry, my apologies, 140 rooms, 105 stories.
140 room, five-story hotel is what's in the master plan right now.
Yes.
Okay. And that is designated as building S, right?
Yes.
And building T.
Building.
Hotel is building T.
Yes. Okay. So the
what exhibit is it?
It's not in here. That's why I'm asking the question.
It's so that I did not include the entire master plan approved plan because it's as thick as what Bill's holding there. Actually, much thicker. And then some. So the portion of the master plan approved is the site plan, which is Exhibit 4, and the cover sheet of the master plan, which Bill is reading from, which is a recorded document, has building T described as building T described as 140 room hotel, five stories, 65 foot building height, and building S as 24,075 square feet. Accessory Convention Center, four hotel, one story, 18 foot building height.
Okay. So basically, gone from 24,075 square feet, single-story conference center to 2,200 square feet incorporated within the footprint of the hotel, and from a five-story, 140-room hotel with a footprint of 18,200 square feet to a six-story, 184-room hotel with a footprint of 16,500 that includes the 2,200 square feet of conference space.
Correct.
Okay.
Gone. Much, much smaller building footprint, much, much smaller, impervious, slightly taller overall.
Mm-hmm. It was the design thing, Steve.
Okay. Yeah, David, could you? I'd like you to point
there's
out
page
where in this document the portions
page 74 is
related to the hotel. I realize there's a lot of other material in this document. I understand that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Let's talk about the hotel.
And just for the board's information, the elevations you saw on things other than the parapet are not finalized. And have not been reviewed by the Architectural Review Board for the pattern book yet.
Can you enlarge your screen, David?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think we want to see,
I think we want to see the words,
language,
though,
yeah.
too. Thanks. So, yeah. sorry.
Well, the pattern book is words and
text. Okay, yeah.
And
I just meant the 75%. You can make that 100. There you go.
Yeah.
100 would be better. 100%.
And then to the right there's
that's fine.
You mentioned the animated roofscape and the large building facade articulated into smaller parts and vertically and horizontally.
Understood. Do you understand, Steve?
Yeah. Is this the only page, David, that applies to hotels?
I think the next page has something about hotels too.
Yes. So this page, as you can see, is more showing diagrams of.
Got it.
The pattern.
Okay. So this is kind of what we're comparing the elevation drawings you've given us to.
Well, yes and no. The elevation drawings have not. One, we're asking for a height variance, not for that we're in compliance with the pattern book. That's not this board's obligation this evening.
But
we understand it's not our jurisdiction, but you're asking us for a variance for something that you still need to go comply with the pattern book.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
And you're also telling us that the reason you need the variance is to comply with one of the reasons that you need the variance is to comply with the pattern book. Mm-hmm. So
right.
I'm looking at this and I'm seeing something different than what.
Well, I think. I think if I can just jump in, I think, am I correct in suggesting that the pattern book is to give developers ideas of the need for a facade that is not 100% flat, but rather you'd like things to go in and out, and you'd like the top to go up and down a little so that there's variety in the structure and to avoid a flat square wall?
That is correct, and part of the problem with renderings in master plans that are now 4 or 5 years old is these are renderings at the time without the benefit of what hotel is this going to be? Like Sandy said, it's the idea to give guidance that don't come to us with a 100-foot long flat wall.
Right.
What's it going to look like?
Right. Understood.
And then in terms of the zoning, we're trying to get them to comply with what's to build this hotel. They need to comply with that pattern book, which was part of the approval.
One more question: What is the height limit in this zone in the absence of a master plan approval?
It is 60 feet.
Okay. And so 65 feet is what you're permitted by right in the zoning ordinance if you have master plan approval.
Correct.
So you have an additional 5 feet to work with.
Yeah, and Steve, I remember the master plan approval portion of this that, you know, I think at the time we said we're not quite sure, or give us, you know, more height in the, and really said when a hotel developer comes online, you can make your case before the zoning hearing board as to why it, you know, it was, I think, recognized that it was likely going to be higher at the time, and that we would be coming to a zoning hearing to make our case as to why that, you know, why it needed to be higher at that point in time.
Okay.
It's awfully hard to anticipate where exactly you're going to be five years before you have a deal. So.
Sure. Other questions from the board? No. Okay. Anything else from the applicant?
Yeah, I just have to mention that the last three exhibits that we did not mention, exhibit 11, 12, and 13. Exhibit 11 is a copy of the Hertzberg case, which is the Seminole, Pennsylvania Supreme Court case related to dimensional variances, which the Supreme Court stated that there is a lesser standard for dimensional variances, which may include other considerations to determine hardship. Second case I inserted here is the Township of Middleton case, which is a Commonwealth Court case from a number of years ago describing the de minimis variance requirements. And a de minimis variance, in this case, I think, would be relevant for a good portion of the variance being requested, especially the four-foot parapet portion of the building, in that de minimis variances are variances that are minor deviations from the zoning ordinance, and rigid compliance is not absolutely necessary to protect the public policy concerns inherent in the ordinance. Again, at most we are 14%, and that's just at the two ends of the building. The rest is less than 10 percentage points above the required height. And then the public policy concerns behind building height regulations are really limited to safety and aesthetics. First, the existence of the parapet wall and the stairwells, I think the testimony says that it makes the building more safe, not less safe. And as to aesthetics, the parapet wall and the articulation of the parapet wall adds to the aesthetics rather than detracting from the aesthetics. And then the third, Exhibit 13, are the portions of the Code of Federal Regulations that have the OSHA regulations that require the parapet wall for workmen that are on top of the building. With all that, I'd like to move for admission of all of the exhibits, and I'd also like to refresh the board's memory of the request for a one-year extension from the one-year limitation under Section 1007. And if there's no further questions, thank you for your time.
Is there public?
Okay, yeah. So if you're done, then anyone from the public that wishes to provide testimony, please come forward. Mr. Crest, please give your name and address.
Both of these on, or do I pick one? Or
well, if the light's on, then it's on.
I think they're both on. All right, let's do this. I'm Jonathan Crist. I reside at 2865 Church Road. I'm a practicing attorney. You all know me. I've practiced in Hershey for damn near 40 years. I semi-retired, but I'm still keeping an eye hand in because I own several properties in Derrick Township, commercial properties. Because of the lateness, I'm going to make 3 points, and I'm going to make them quickly. One, we're talking about, we run this.
I'm sorry, Steve, you need to swear him in, please.
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry, would
you just have to be sworn in.
It's already a long night. Okay, yeah, please.
Want to swear me in?
Before you start, I do. Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay, thank you.
Most of what I have to say is either common knowledge or a public record anyway. We're talking about master planning process as though it's some sort of magical system. You have to remember that in Derry Township, a master plan can be one single lot. So that just the fact that this is a conglomerate and a number of lots doesn't mean anything. A master planning process has been determined in Derry Township can apply to one single property. What does that mean? From purposes of anything this board grants, all you have to do then is call yourself a master plan, and whatever relief this board gives becomes a standard for potentially for all other properties just by calling themselves a master plan. So keep in mind that this is just not unique to the master plan situation. What you are really doing is opening up potential for other properties. And I say that this is a height variance. You have one issue before you as a board. That's a height variance. What is the standard for a variance? Hardship. I haven't heard one word about hardship. You know, other than, well, we want to make a certain ROI. What's ROI? Return on investment. Well, you can take two floors of rooms off of this, get it down to 120 rooms, and you don't need a height variance. This board has actually decided this issue 3 years ago. The exact same issue, the exact same thing, except it was talking about an apartment complex up on Northeast Drive. It was called Cacao Way. You wrote an opinion. I think Megan Heff wrote the opinion. It is opinion number 2019-07, which basically says there's no hardship. You don't get your variance. And we haven't heard one iota of evidence about hardship. You can cut the cup two floors off. They can still build a hotel. They can still make money. They just can't make as much money. That's not hardship. Your own decision. Would anybody like a copy of this? This is 2019-07. I think it was signed by you, Sandy. Remember it?
We're familiar. Thank you.
I'm going to give a copy to the court reporter so that she has it for the record.
That's fine. Yeah, we have those records.
I want to make sure that the record.
Okay. Yeah, we have records of our own decisions.
My final point. We talk about health, safety, and welfare. When you look at this plan from where it is, and I'm not just the building, but where it situates on the land, what is directly east of this building? Think about it for a moment, ladies and gentlemen. I'm a pilot. I look at things from above. I do a lot of flying. What you've got there is the helipad for the lifeline that's in the flight line path of this. So you've got a health, safety, and welfare issue that nobody has addressed. Think about that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other members of the public?
Matt, please respond very quickly.
Well, I'd like to hear from all of the members of the public, and then certainly if the applicant wants to respond, I think that would be the appropriate way to go. I just want to make sure there's no one else. Is there anyone else who wants to testify? Okay, please go ahead.
Two responses to Mr. Chris's comments. First of all, we're well aware that this is that actually Hershey West End for zoning purposes is one lot. However, we are requesting the variance only for Unit F and this building. This would not apply to any other building in West End. Secondly, his reference to the Cacao Drive decision. I would like to remind the board, as you probably know, that each case before this board is decided on a case-by-case basis based upon the merits of each application. And they do not have any precedential effect. And to that point, this board has granted height variances for reasons similar to the ones we've presented and have denied height variances in other cases. And again, it is on a case-by-case basis. So, again, it has no precedential effect. Thank you.
The only thing I'd add is the heliport, I think that came up during the H-Car building, which was 2008, verified recently. The flight line that is a non-issue as far as the medical center is concerned.
Okay, Unless there's any.
If I could just ask one final question, and I'll go back to my previous one. And since the previous Cacao Way case, you know, was referenced as well, because I heard that case on this board, and asked a similar question. You spoke to the de minimis and some of the precedent set in case law about that, and I asked the previous question about could this building be done in a way that complies. And so I'm just going to ask one final time for the record to please hear you state that what you are seeking is what you deem to be the least amount of relief that can be sought in order to create this project. And I'll just be very candid, I ask, because we often hear this, and if there were to be a denial of that, very often we then see a change in plans. And so I'm just going to be very candid in saying that can be, you know, somewhat frustrating when there's testimony saying, no, we couldn't do it any other way. And so I'm asking you for the record to please testify to that.
I think I heard your question. Larry Westrich. I could build a one-story hotel with all these rooms on it, but it would not be safe for the customer. It would not be safe for, it would not be good for the environment. It would not be good for the green space, the water retention, impervious area, you name it. It would not be good for that. Building a hotel like we have designed is by far the best for our customers and in Hershey tourism guest for travel distances. When you have a fire, which we hope we never have, when you have a medical emergency, which we have quite a bit, where somebody will have a heart attack and call for help in a room, the travel distances to get our guests and our employees to help them is very important on stuff like that. I know it doesn't seem like it's going to come up, but I bet I can show you four instances in the last 6 weeks where I've had reports come across my desk exactly something like that. So I don't know if that answers your question, but like I said, you can build whatever you want to, but it's not, there's other circumstances that get affected when you do that.
Thank you.
All right, don't go away, because I'm going to ask Lindsay's question a slightly different way.
Sorry.
Okay. Can you build a 140-room hotel that is compliant with the 65-foot height and not sacrifice the safety issues that you're talking about?
Somebody could. We probably would not, or could not, or would do it from our perspective.
Could not or would not?
I'm going to say from our perspective, we could not, and honor all of our beliefs that we've trained ourselves to want to give our guests and provide our customers. So not to be rude, but I'm just saying that we could not fulfill our obligations to our customer by building a 140-room hotel, chopping a floor off and doing 140 rooms.
I do think for context it's important to note that the 140-room hotel also had a very large convention center. So it's not a complete apples-to-apples comparison.
All right.
So, you know, if we're talking about the same amount of square feet, impervious coverage, you know, footprint, different argument. But I think in this case, I think we do have to keep that context. I mean, another way to say it, could you build a 184-room hotel in the old footprint that was a part of the master plan, keeping in mind that you said that would, you know, create less green space, more of a safety issue? Would that be something that's possible?
If I heard your question right, could
we're talking about 140 versus 184, whatever. I'm saying, okay. And you, I thought, made the case that part of the reason is, you know, yeah, everybody, it's money, everybody wants ROI. That should, in my opinion, that is a real-world thing that needs to be taken into account. but also, you know, we're talking about green space, encroachment, impervious coverage. Based on the old master plan, would you be able to likely add an additional 44 rooms and use the old footprint that was approved as a part of the master plan and make a wider hotel? Do you understand what I'm saying? Or?
I'm not quite following what I'm asking.
Mike, if I could, if
let me just.
Yeah, it was 42,000 square feet that was approved as part of the master plan between the two buildings. What's being proposed is the 16,500. So you're saying, could you have done the 184 rooms inside of the 42,000 square feet versus the smaller footprint that you're doing now with the height?
Well, 42,000 square feet. Like you said, we're doing it in 16,000.
Right.
Right.
So, you could, but it gets back to the health, safety, and welfare, travel distances, and all that.
Okay.
Mike, did I explain that? I understood what you were.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I just I wanted to hear that them testify that, that it could be done. Yeah, you're choosing to do it for another other reasons. It's, again, up versus out.
Right.
Okay.
And clarifying that they're not using all of the space that was allotted for in the master plan original design.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Then this hearing is closed, and the board has 45 days to render a decision, and you have 30 days to appeal if you're aggrieved in any way. Thank you.
Thank you.
I need to get some water.
We're going to take a about a
five-minute
recess to 8:15 on the clock in the back of the room there, and then we'll resume with the next hearing.
Did we have to order the agenda in the order in which applications are received?
You as a board can decide. Yes, maybe. Well, I don't know who's here for the next one. I think that could be a longer one, too.
That's going to be a long time.
Yeah.
You could ask the applicant,
but you could also decide to talk about the hearing officers and move that to the next meeting.
I was, despite your good work in the meantime, I was already anticipating making that motion.
Well, and I don't know how many we have for next month, but I hope it's, I assume it's less than five.
Yeah.
Despite her good work.
I got a good This was done for a while.
that they approve it. They approve the agreement, and it's my position to be for they have no authority to approve that agreement as a violation. So,
yes, right. Yeah, you know that better than anybody.
I know. What do you think about this? Should be
Okay, where is everybody?
I got some out.
Was it necessary for us to know the history of the corporation?
No, but, you know, they put on their show.
That's a sponsored show, too.
Rock and roll. Thousands of dollars. And everybody was talking too fast. I was like, come on, talk fast. Mike is back. David ran to the restroom.
Where did Dave go? He was just here.
He went to the restroom.
Oh, he was
way late. Hold on, I just got to get my papers organized here. All right.
I'm sorry, probably.
I hope nobody else is going to hand me another book to sign me.
I know, right?
Where's David? Huh? We'll start without David. We don't need to wait for David. Yes, to
it's okay.
Okay. All right, let's resume, please. Okay, our next case is new business hearing in the case of Daniel J. Smith, case number 2022-01.
Thank you for
thank you for your patience. I guess you picked the wrong month to submit, but
no problem. Thank you very much.
But anyway, if you both of you going to be testifying tonight? Is there anyone else will be testifying on your behalf? Just the two of you?
Just us.
Yes. Okay, so if you please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir.
If you could both please give your full name and your address, please.
My name is Daniel James Smith. We are at 1426 Church Road, Hershey, PA, 17033.
And I am Hannah Smith.
Okay, same address.
Please say your first name again.
Hannah.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so go ahead and proceed.
Thank you very much for hearing us out this evening. We are seeking a special exception to run a bed and breakfast out of our home. Our house is an 1821 property that was built by Arthur Fishbourne right off of Church Road, and we acquired it in 2018 after I'd left the Air Force. And we since have done a lot of renovations to it, and we would like to continue some of those renovations, which those plans have already been approved for building, the renovations that we have planned to the addition. What we'd like to do, though, is get approval for a special exception to run a bed and breakfast out of that house, one that meets the current criteria within Derry Township's specifications to run a bed and breakfast. That would be, we would be running with 5 rentable rooms. We would live in the 6th room. It would be a very small European-style bed and breakfast. What that means is it's just one table. You all sit together. It's very intimate. And it would be focused on mostly just couples, people without children. So whether they're prior to having children or their children have grown and moved on. Just based on the sizing and the spacing that we had at the property, that's kind of the direction that we were going. So we would like your consideration this evening to grant us that special exception.
And I'm going to ask the same question, David. Can you read the requirements for a special exception? I think it's on page 221 of our book.
Yeah, page 221. And there's two parts, please, David. One, the first is 502, which is the criteria that applies to all special exception uses, and then 502.1, which are additional specific things that apply to a bed and breakfast home in the Pershing mixed use zone, right? Which is what you're in, correct?
Correct.
All right. So section 22.
Actually, but maybe what might be most efficient here, so we can. No, I assume you've seen these sections.
We have,
so
yes,
what
sir.
What might be most effective is, David, if you can kind of, rather than read the whole thing,
yeah,
Sandy, maybe hit each point and please give the applicant the opportunity to please
explain
comment
it
on that point.
Yes, sir.
Okay? Because right, that's what we need to hear from you in order to consider your request.
And you can just start with B1.
Right.
You
know. Yep.
Did you say B1?
B1. Yeah, 502B as in boy 1.
The Township Zoning Hearing Board shall find that the use will not adversely affect the health or safety of residents in the neighborhood or district in which the use is located. Will the proposed bed and breakfast affect the health or safety of the neighborhood or district?
I would say absolutely not. I mean, the current area already houses quite a bit of transient people in the area, tourists that are coming and going, and really we're not offering anything overtly different than what's currently offered, but rather just a different, very intimate and, I mean, I would just say a quiet environment. So it's not really any different than what we're currently doing as far as our in coming and going from our own house. It's just that we'd be adding a few additional, I'd say the biggest health and safety, if you were going to say anything adverse to it, is there'd maybe be 10 additional cars on Church Road per day.
No, probably only 5.
Ultimately,
yeah,
it's a negligible amount.
Yeah.
And may I add that our property is just shy of 2 acres, so we don't have neighbors that are right on us.
And we have Brookside Park directly next to us.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Go ahead, Deb.
The Township Zoning Hearing Board shall find that the use will not overburden the existing public services, including water, sanitary sewer, public roads, storm drainage, or other public improvements. Would you say that the proposal will not overburden any public services, as mentioned previously?
Yes.
Yes, we would.
Our permits have already been, approved for the addition that we are building, and that includes, we've done stormwater management. We've already redone drainage and sewer, and the addition will have all new piping, so there's not going to be anything that's compromising.
Are you on public sewer and public water?
Yes, sir.
Both. Okay. All right.
The Township Zoning Hearing Board shall find that the use will not be detrimental to the use or development of or change the essential character of the neighborhood or district in which the use is proposed. The Township Zoning Hearing Board shall consider, at a minimum, the impact of noise, dust, light, odor, and adequacy of parking. So to simplify this, will your proposal increase the noise, dust, light, odor, or parking burden on the neighborhood or the district in which the property is located?
No, the proposed addition is, I mean, we're not even adding outdoor lighting or anything like that. I mean, this really, I actually feel like it fits very much into the spirit of what Hershey has to offer. I mean, it's going to be a small, quaint, I mean, five-room, rentable room, bed and breakfast. It's intended to be a very intimate setting, and it's not intended, we're not going to be having live music and bands there or anything. It's not going to be a event venue. There's no intent for events there.
Absolutely no weddings ever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The use shall meet all other requirements of this chapter that may apply.
Well, that's 502.1. So we'll, right? That number four refers to 502.1 for a bed and breakfast.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
So yep. You'll enter those individually. So keep going.
And then the minimum lot area shall be 1 acre when the
That doesn't apply because yep. You're on public sewer. So, okay.
So, skipping to 502.1. Okay, 225-502.1. All lots to contain a bed and breakfast home shall be compliant with all applicable lot criteria of the zoning district. Does your lot currently meet the lot criteria of the zoning district of Hershey Mixed Use?
Yes, sir, it does. Okay.
To maintain consistency between established and proposed development, parking on the lot shall not be located between the front facade and front lot line when use of an alley for parking is available. Parking areas shall retain a residential appearance. So in two parts, is there access to the property via an alley?
There is not.
The second part, will the proposed parking maintain a residential appearance?
Absolutely.
How many parking spaces are required? How many parking spaces are you providing? How many do you currently have?
So we currently, I mean, we have no lines drawn in our driveway, but the driveway actually sits on a separate parcel, which we have combined. It is now one parcel, but our deed is still listing it as two, and I've been exchanging emails actually with my attorney today trying to get this thing finalized. It's been a bit of a process.
Your deed or the tax assessor's office?
The deed, sir. Now, I could be speaking out of turn on this.
Okay, hold on, please. Oh. Our court reporter needs a break, and we can't continue without her. So she's the most important person in the room. No, that's fine. Do what you need to do. Okay. All right, just bear with us.
No problem.
Let's play elevator music. Or a game show. No, we're fine. I think we're ready now.
All right, you ready?
Yep.
Okay, that was quick. All right. All right. We're going to put you on the pit crew at the Indianapolis 500. So, okay.
So to repeat the question, it was, is this the tax assessment office versus my deed? Is that?
Yeah. So you have a deed that consolidated the lots?
If you would like, I can give you some background on this.
Okay. I thought we had a
copy
of that.
There was a deed of consolidation submitted with the
right. Okay. So if it's not reflected, the tax assessor's office, that doesn't really
no, sir.
Apply.
No,
sir.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Go on.
Between those, we would end up having 8 parking spots. So that's per – there would be 1 parking spot per room with an additional 2. But that also includes an existing barn structure that is on the property that has 4 parking spots within the barn.
Okay. So you're using the existing barn to provide 4
for
parking
ourselves.
Spaces.
Yeah,
personal parking.
Right.
And do you have any existing spaces that are outside the barn right now?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, yes.
Yeah. So how many
realistically,
are you,
three.
How many are you adding?
Three. We would be adding 4 additional spaces.
I mean, I think there's probably room for 3 right now outside the barn.
The parking situation has not been finalized. However, we would be adding at maximum 4.
You said you had plans approved, so I apologize if I'm jumping ahead here. So
it's okay.
Parking part has not been resolved yet. But okay,
correct.
So
yes, sir.
Some of the parking will be utilizing the existing barn and some...
There will be need for minimal addition.
Maximum 4 additional spots.
Adding a driveway.
Spots.
Will you be adding a driveway? Because I guess you have a driveway that goes
driveway
that goes to where the barn is.
Yes, sir.
So you will not be adding another driveway?
Not at this time, sir, no.
Okay. I saw something on one of the drawings
that's
that showed
exactly.
Yes.
Is that not happening?
Not yet.
Not currently.
We have not submitted the plans for that. We have not decided upon that, sir.
Okay.
All if right. I mean, if you'd like me to elaborate.
Well,
if
I think the issue is as to its effect on safety. Is that what you're saying?
Well, safety and just appearance of the neighborhood is what, you know, 502.1B, you know, is relative to where parking is placed on the lot. And if
yes,
you
sir.
Have an alley, then it needs to be behind the front of the structure. If you don't, it
there will be no parking
closer.
That's on Church Road. It'll all come off. If we add additional parking, it will be in the area that butts up against Brookside Park, so it would look natural right with Brookside's parking that's existing.
Right.
If we place a driveway in the front of the house, it will only be to drop off luggage and to give a nice appearance of a nice horseshoe driveway in front, which those are things we have not decided on.
Loading and unloading, but not parking.
Sir. Not for parking.
Because it's not the same thing in the zoning ordinance. Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. You answered my question.
Thank you.
Go on.
There you go.
No more than 10 bedrooms may be available or used for such use in any building. Will you be renting more than 10 bedrooms?
No, sir.
Not more than one ground sign shall be permitted on the lot, and it shall meet the dimensional requirements of this chapter. Do you propose to add more than one sign to the property?
No, sir.
Meal service shall be limited to breakfast only to overnight guests of the facility. Will you be offering meals to
anyone?
The general public?
No, sir.
Will they have access to a full kitchen?
No.
All off-street parking spaces shall be provided on the lot. The number of off-street parking and loading spaces shall be provided as defined by this chapter. All parking spaces and driveways shall be surfaced with bituminous brick, concrete, or stone block paving materials. Will you be providing parking adequate to the needs of the bed and breakfast and within the parameters outlined by the ordinance?
Yes, sir.
The owner and or manager of the facility shall reside therein. Will you maintain your residence?
Yes.
An overnight guest shall not occupy the facility for more than 14 consecutive nights in a 30-day period. Will you be renting on a nightly basis for greater than 14 nights?
No.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Great. So covered the criteria. A few quick questions for you. So looking at your drawings you submitted, I just want to clarify because I'm not sure I interpreted some of it correctly. So is your building footprint changing from what is currently there?
It is, yes,
sir. Adding an addition to the back?
The addition is going out. I do not know the additional footprint exactly, but the current addition goes out around 10 foot. We're now putting, when we redo that, that one will come down and we're adding around 10 feet to that, so it would be 20 foot.
Okay, so there's the house in, that you see from front.
Yes,
there's
sir.
There's a side porch, correct? On,
correct.
Not the Brookside side, park side, but the other side, right?
Yep.
And then you're saying behind the current house, there is an addition that comes 10 foot back.
Yes.
And that's coming off?
Correct. That addition
is adding a new addition that's deeper into
correct.
The lot.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So the drawings you gave us are what is proposed to be constructed, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And approved.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So as far as the exterior appearance then, is anything changing on the front side, or is it just that back addition part that the appearance will change to be what you've shown on the drawings?
Only the back addition, sir.
Okay. How about the height or roof profile? Is that changing?
No, the reverse gable on the back of the house with the current addition is not in the midline. So the new addition does change that to the reverse gable will come off direct midline at the same height as the original house roof line. But that's not going, it's actually for symmetry, it's going to make it a symmetrical roof line.
Okay, but it's still within the, is it 35 feet here, David? Height limit?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yes.
Talked about parking So what areas will the guests have access to other than their bedroom, bathroom?
If you have plans in front of you, they would have access to all of the areas except for...
Excuse me.
That's okay. Except for our living quarters, which will be on the third floor of the addition. The basement, the dugout basement of the addition, that will not be access to them. Technically, you know, you asked the question earlier, do they have access to the kitchen? I mean, we're not going to lock up the kitchen, but it is...
But they do not have... They will not have access to cook.
Okay.
Hannah is a professional chef. She will be preparing the food for them.
Okay.
Okay.
So, David, is a stormwater management plan required for the parking, or is that something that's still being worked out relative to the parking and the addition?
That will be when they propose the additional parking, we will examine what the current stormwater plan, what relief that provides, if there shall be any further impervious set-off required. They will be required to obviously offset the impervious over the threshold that the BMP covers.
So that includes both additional parking and also the larger addition?
Yes.
Okay.
The current submitted stormwater plan that has been approved pending a change in some wording of the deed includes the addition.
Okay. And are there any issues? I guess the floodplain there is...
Correct. The floodplain is...
The floodplain kind of cuts across the back of your property.
Right, and that's the backstory and why it was two parcels. Yep.
Gets flooded at times, so does that have any impact on approval of the addition, the parking, you know, et cetera?
The addition is wholly outside the floodplain.
Okay.
So there is no recourse from the township as far as restrictions on the addition, as it is wholly outside the floodplain.
Okay. How about as far as parking? Is there any requirement that that's outside of the floodplain or anything like that?
No.
That makes sense.
Our recommendation would be to, when it does come time to add parking, to keep it out of the floodplain, just so you're keeping sediment and all of the stuff that helps absorption in the place where it's needed most.
Okay. Okay. So I'm not sure we saw existing house, because I counted four bedrooms, so I'm just trying to understand. So are two of the bedrooms in the existing second floor, I'm guessing?
Correct. Yes, okay. Sir.
If you can just go to the plans quick and just... So I saw two bedrooms on the third floor of the addition, two bedrooms on the second floor of the addition. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Next one.
Well, there's two bedrooms on the right
I'm
there.
Sorry.
That's the
I'm
second
sorry.
Floor,
my bad, Dave.
Right?
Go back. There you go.
Right side there, that's the second floor addition. Is that right?
It appears to be.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then go on to the next drawing, David. So, and I guess you have two in the third floor of the addition, which is the right side there as well?
There would be one in the third floor of the addition. There would also be one in the original house's third floor,
which is currently just an attic.
Right, got it.
I see. So one of those is what you're going to be using, and one is going to be rent.
Yes, okay. Sir.
So two up on the third floor.
Yes, sir.
Two on the second floor of the addition, and then the other two
are in the current original portion of the house on the second floor.
Second floor, got it. Which is right, just a square on there. Okay, got it.
Yes, sir. Perfect right. Square.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. Other questions? I think they've gone through the criteria. Okay.
Audience. Hmm? Oh, never mind.
And the rooms are going to be rented individually to different couples, as you've indicated. To a family that's renting the whole house or something like that?
We would not, no, we would not do like an Airbnb or something where we rent the whole house. We would just do individual rooms. And I mean, if somebody were to come with a larger group and rent two rooms, we would not, you know, prevent that. That would be permitted, but it would be individual rooms.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Let me just ask for any comments from anybody from the public here who wishes to comment on this case.
Okay.
Thank you for your patience.
Okay. One last question. Have you had any discussions with, I know you're next to the park there. Have you had any discussions with any of the other neighbors in the area?
Yes, sir. We had a tree lighting ceremony this year and had, you know, choir come for the Christmas season and had around 40 people there, and we talked about our plans, and
nobody
voiced any concerns whatsoever. So that was encouraging to us.
Right. Okay, very good.
Thank you very much.
And again, the board has 45 days to render a decision, and you have 30 days to appeal if you're agreed by that decision. Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks.
Okay, our next order of business is a hearing in the case of Dialysis Care Center, a.k.a. Home Dialysis Center, LLC, case number 2022-02.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry to prolong your evening like this. My name is Dave Getz. I represent the applicant here this evening.
Okay, and I'll need to swear everybody in, but Dave, are you going to be directing testimony as opposed to testifying on their behalf?
I can do it either way you'd like to.
Whichever way you wish. It's just a question of whether I need to swear you in or not.
You probably want to swear me in, and Brittany, and
anyone who's going to talk.
Anyone who's going to testify.
Stand up and raise your hand. Yeah. It doesn't hurt. Just in case.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay. Thank you. So, Dave, if you could just please introduce each person as
sure.
First yourself and then the others as they testify.
As they come out. Yeah.
Yep. As they come up.
The Dialysis Care Center currently operates in a building next to the Courtyard Marriott. They are wanting to expand that space into what used to be a dental practice. There is some space on the second floor that they want to give up as part of this process. So the increased space is less than 40% expansion. Under the township ordinance, an expansion of up to 50% can be permitted by special exception where this is a non-conforming use. This was a permitted use a few years ago when it went in. Because of the change of the ordinance, it's considered now to be a non-conforming use because it's classified as an outpatient treatment center as opposed to a healthcare practitioner. We want to expand, as I said, into the adjoining space that was a dental practice. We think that's going to be helpful for everybody. Brittany Jones, who is one of the workers here, one of the employees, is going to answer a few questions that you probably have about the space and what they do.
Could you have her spell her name as well?
Brittany Jones, Jones.
And you work at the facility?
Yes, I've worked there for 6 years.
And how often do patients come to the dialysis center?
For the in-center hemodialysis, they attend treatment Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And then we also have a home therapies program. Those patients are required to be seen at least twice a month.
And when, slow down just a little bit.
So Monday, Wednesday, Friday
and
is,
home treatment.
Is
for hemodialysis.
Okay.
And then we have a home program. Those patients are required, once they're trained in home, they're required to come in twice a month.
So they come on Tuesdays and Thursdays, is that what you're saying?
It just varies on the physician that they see and when they need to come.
Okay.
When someone comes for Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, how long are they generally there?
So a hemodialysis treatment can range anywhere, usually starting at 3 hours, upwards to 4.5 hours. But with getting them in the clinic, vital signs, making sure the machine's ready, getting them prepped and ready to go, if you have somebody that's a four-hour treatment, you're easily looking at least five and a half hours that they're there total.
So how many patients on a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the extended do you typically see?
So currently we run three shifts on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We have six chairs, so we see a total of 18 patients in the home center.
And
18 patients total on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
And where do your patients live?
Majority of them are within the Hershey-Hummelstown area.
And why does it matter that you are located close to where the patients are?
I think that we've had so much change over the past with COVID. It's really, you know, with the dialysis world, it's really changed a lot of things space-wise. But keeping consistency where we're at and expanding so that we can have, you know, more space to spread out for them to make it safer would definitely be appropriate.
And I understand that about three-quarters of your patients live within 10 miles. Is that correct?
Yes.
And why does it matter that people don't have to go a long way to get their dialysis?
They're already spending, you know, 5, possibly 6 hours. That's 5 hours as if the treatment starts with no problems, everything's great, and it's, you know, wonderful and perfect and no mechanical issues. So, you know, you're already spending 5 to 6 hours a day there. Why would you want to drive any further? Weather. We live in central Pennsylvania. No one knows what it's ever going to do. So the convenience for the patient is the biggest thing.
And you mentioned COVID a minute ago. Do you need to spread your patients out and your staff out from one another?
Absolutely. I mean, the need in our area has grown, so our facility, you know, our patient load has grown, and as that grows, we need more space, definitely.
And why is the patient load growing?
The biggest reason, I mean, we've seen an uptick with, you know, COVID recently, patients having kidney failure due to COVID issues, long-term COVID issues, but also, you know, diabetes and high blood pressure, one of your number, you know, your two leading causes of people that go into renal failure. So as the population gets older, you see more and more of that, unfortunately.
And when the dentist was there, the dentist is not there now, correct?
Correct.
When the dentist was there, did you have opportunities to look out the window and see what was going on at their practice?
Absolutely. We share the main lobby, like the main door to the actual building, we share with them. So coming in and out of the facility, you would see the amount of patients that they had in there. And there was quite a few times that they had an overload of patients in there where they were bleeding out into that shared lobby area just because they see a lot of patients. A lot.
So it's fair to say they have a lot more people in the building a day than you will have.
Oh, absolutely. There's not enough hours in the day to compete with that.
Thank you. That's all the questions I have for her. Thanks. Does the board have any questions for Brittany? Let me say that the space that's shown in blue is our current space. And Dave, if you'd slide to the next page. Thank you. We're going to keep that space and then expand into this one. And as you can see, the chairs are further spread out than they are right now. A lot of this is just safety and the need to be able to serve additional patients. I'm going to...
David, if I can interrupt.
Yes, sir.
Interrupt you. So I'm taking it from those numbers there that there'll be 12 chairs then going forward, going from 6 to 12. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. I also heard you say that currently the dialysis center occupies space on the second floor.
That's right.
That's going to be relinquished, you're saying?
That is correct.
And so can you give us the number? Do you know the numbers, or is somebody going to be testifying to the numbers of what's the existing first floor space, existing second floor space,
the existing first floor space is 3,033
okay.
square feet.
I think that was that a revised exhibit, David?
It is, yes.
Yes,
that exhibit
okay.
was revised in the last few days.
Okay.
This is not what you have in your package. The first floor is 3,033 square feet that we're currently occupying. The current existing second floor is 693 square feet. That's a total of 3,726 square feet. We propose to expand by 1,714 square feet, total 4,747. And that's an increase of something less than 40%. So we're well within the special exception.
So the 1714 is the new first floor space minus the second floor space, or is that the net?
The expansion, yes, it's a net. Right, that's exactly right. So we're giving up some second floor and expanding into
right.
The
So net of the second floor that's being relinquished.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct. As I said, it's 36, I think, percent expansion, which is well within the 50% special exception criteria. I would be happy to run through in the application. There were some questions on page 5 describing why it will not adversely affect the health or safety of the residents. We already occupy one of the suites. It's already there. We're not changing anything outside the building. The facade will not change. The existing vegetation, everything else, is not going to change. So we're really, the person driving down the street's not going to know it's any different. The second question is about public services, water, sanitary, sewer, public roads, storm drainage, and other public improvements. The dentist used water. We use water. Dentists use lights. We use lights. The public roads actually will be a little bit of an improvement because we'll be having fewer people coming in per day than the dentist's share had. So we'll actually be improving. There'll be fewer people pulling out on to Chocolate Avenue and pulling in. So that will actually probably be a benefit to the neighborhood. And the special exception use will not be detrimental to the use or development of changes to the essential character of the neighborhood. As I said, we're next to the courtyard. There is a doctor's office in front of us and a golf course behind us. And again, the facade of the building does not change. So we really don't think that there's going to be any negative impact from that. And then the last question is explain how the proposed special exception use meets all other requirements of the zoning ordinance, including the special criteria. The existing building doesn't change. So really, people are not going to see that there's really any difference at all. There are some criteria for a special exception under section 225-602B, as in boy. Most of these don't apply. The first one is the expansion is limited to a distance of 250 feet from the existing nonconformity. We're 3 feet from it, 5 feet from it, so we're all within that. It's limited to a floor increase of not more than 50%. As I testified, and as we testified, it's more in a range of 36%. The third criteria, number 3, is confined to the lot on which it was located. It is. Number 4, does not violate any parking, loading, minimum area, height, vegetative cover, impervious cover, floodplain, and our buffer requirements. It doesn't because all the parking is already there. We're going to be using less of it than the prior user was using. Existing non-conforming uses of land that encroach upon the current minimum front, rear, or side yards, and it goes on from there. We're not doing any of that because it's an existing building. The proposal includes adequate landscaping, buffering, and as such architectural design that nearby properties will not be more adversely affected than they were. Again, there's no difference because the outside facade of the building will not be changed. Happy to address the additional comments. I think that on page 6 of the application, it says specific criteria for special exception uses, and under B, the Township Zoning Hearing Board finds that it will not adversely affect the health or safety of residents in the neighborhood or district in which the use is located. We think this will be a betterment to the neighborhood because we'll be able to serve more people, as you heard from Brittany. Many, three-quarters of the patients come from about 10 miles or less. It's a needed service. Sadly, the need for it is growing. And it will allow people to not stay in their home, but stay close to home to receive these really necessary treatments. If you know anyone who has been on dialysis, you know that you have to make these appointments. You can't skip a week. You've got to always be at your vacation, at your spot. You can't go on vacation unless you can find a place to get dialysis while you're gone. So this is a critical need that people have, and if we can serve them closer to their homes, that's all the better. Number 2 is the Zoning Hearing Board finds that the use will not overburden existing public services, including water, sewer, public roads, We kind of talked about that we're actually going to do a little, it'll be probably a little bit less strain on the roads than the dentist's office. Number three is about the essential character of the neighborhood. Everything's indoors, so it really is not going to affect that. And the minimum lot area is 1 acre when it was online septic. This is on public sewer, so that really criteria doesn't apply. And we meet all the other requirements of the chapter that we've just gone over. I have other people here from the dialysis center that are prepared to answer any questions that you might have, but I think I'll leave it there and ask you for what questions you might have that we can address.
David, if you would just confirm, as far as parking, anticipate, as stated, that the parking need for this will be less than what was there, what was needed before, or what's provided?
Yes. The parking. If you can go, I don't think, Dave, any of those other sheets show the exterior other than just renderings.
But I know there's
the parking for the building was sufficient for the dental practice, and we expect to have fewer trips, fewer people coming in than the dental practice did. So the parking was okay before, and it should
be. It sounds that way. I just want to make sure from an ordinance standpoint that David's confirming that.
This is the existing building here, and this parking lot all the way around it.
I'm sorry, my error. I'm talking about David Havig from the township. Name. I'm sorry.
My apologies.
I should have been clearer.
Yes, the proposed expansion of this non-conforming use will not burden the parking lot beyond what the dental practice that was there previous done.
I just wanted the township to go on the record. Sorry about that.
that's quite all right.
It's getting late. Okay. And really, this is maybe Megan more for you. Is there any issue when I was looking at this? As far as the date in here, I realize that's probably set for when the ordinance went into place. Does that create any issues for us legally?
No, but that's something that David from the township would be able to confirm what
because this
what
building
was there at the time.
May not have existed in 1993, is that right?
I have no
idea. Does this building even exist in 1993?
I don't recall when the building was built. I think it was built after that, though.
Yeah.
But when the dialysis center went in, it was a permitted use. It was the zoning ordinance a couple years ago that took outpatient treatment facilities and removed them from this zoning district. I'm not exactly sure why, but that's
right.
It's a discussion for a different day.
Maybe let me ask you, was a dialysis center in this building from the start when it was first built?
No.
Or was there someone else there, something else there before?
To offer a brief history of the building, at one point there was a physical therapy place, including a pool. To reference the code change, it was 2017 ordinance that I almost used outlawed, but changed outpatient medical facility to a non-conforming use in this district. So,
and I did want to note the applicant didn't answer the question, when did the current use of the property begin? So when did the dialysis center start using that building? You have to stand up and talk in the microphone.
And your name? We need
my name? Babajide Salaka, BABAJIDE, last name Salaka, SALAKO.
I'm sorry, could you just start over with the spelling?
I beg your pardon, ma'am.
The spelling of your name?
BABAJIDE. D as in David, David Edward, DE. Yes, ma'am. We leased the space out in 2015, though, and I believe we moved in early 2016, February.
Okay.
2016.
Great, thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about that, but that's just not relevant.
Right, right. Okay. Any other questions from board members? Okay. What is one thing on your plan? What is the what's WT on that plan? WT on the left side there, left corner.
Oh, that's water treatment.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it's to treat what's coming in for, got it. That's all.
Right.
Okay. Okay, there's no other questions. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak regarding this case, this hearing? Hearing none, thank you for your patience tonight. It's a long meeting.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you for the testimony. And again, the board has 45 days to render a decision, and you have 30 days to appeal if you're aggrieved in any way.
Thank you. Now that the record's closed, I want to tell you that when I was a kid, my mother used to drive a friend of hers to dialysis at Johns Hopkins from Lancaster.
Wow.
That's how far you used to have to go to get this service, and how much better we've come over the decades since I was a kid.
Right. Right.
Thanks for your time.
All right, thank you. Okay, last but not least.
Yes.
Sorry, we do this in the order in which your applications came in, so. Okay.
No complaints here.
So, next order of business, new business, is hearing in the case of RPM Signs and Lighting, case number 2022-03. So if you could please raise your right hand.
I'll do that.
Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay, if you would first please give your name and please spell it for the court reporter.
It's Justin Shelton. It's J-U-S-T-I-N. Shelton, S-H-E-L-T-O-N, and I'm the manager for Springwood FHP-LP, which is the owner of the Fairfield Inn and Suites. FHP-LP, Limited Partnership. So this is the sign in question. I know that you guys have been looking at the different variances. Reasons for a variance. This particular hotel is, if you're familiar with the area, it is behind the shopping center off Chocolate Avenue that has the Staples, and we're down about 20 feet in elevation. We are actually a five-story building, as you can see here, but you can only see the top three. You can kind of see the third floor window. If you were to move this further down Chocolate Avenue, the other direction, you cannot see the fourth floor window, over the Staples building. Come down a little bit. But you can't see, you basically, if we were to put it below the window sill, you cannot see the signage. And that's the only sign on the north side of the building. And it's not uncommon for people to come into the area, go to the park first because it opens earlier than check-in time, and then come late at night, come in to check in the hotel. Actually, some of the busiest check-in periods for us is, 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, depending on when the park is closing. So if they're coming from downtown Hershey, they are not going to be able to see the hotel if there's no lighting or signage on it. So that was the reason for our original variance, is the fact that we do have a rather large elevation change, as well as a shopping center in front of us that blocks the view of the hotel. The sign that we have, as you can see on here, the original sign was actually 54 inches in height. The new sign that we're requesting is only 37 and a half. So it doesn't require the stack that they used to for the Marriott brand. The length is roughly the same, and it's only going to stick out about 3 inches off the building compared to 12 inches off the building that's there currently.
Some clarification, you said the original sign was 54 inches. That's what it was approved for.
The original variance was for 54 inches in height.
But that's not what that sign is, correct?
That Fairfield Inn and Suites sign? Yeah. It is.
Because of the Marriott underneath?
Underneath, yes. From the bottom of the Marriott, the M, okay, all the way to the top of the really F on the other side is 54 inches.
Yep.
And basically, it looks a lot, I think it looks better, but the Fairfield on the other side is basically, the F is 36 inches, and the F in the middle is what brings it up to 37 or
David, that's 30. That's accurate?
Yes. The when we measure signs, just going.
My first question, that is in fact 54.
Yes, seeing the Marriott is what adds.
Marriott.
Yes.
It is. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe so.
So the Fairfield portion might be less, but the overall with Marriott underneath is more.
The F on the Fairfield on the
left?
Original is very similar in size. It's the Marriott that goes underneath that gets you the extra.
Yeah, that's what makes it go.
Okay. So is there a reason the prior variance does not cover your changing of the sign?
I can give you my understand. Do you want me to go? Or you
I'll let either of you answer that.
So in Derry Township, our ordinance, there's no such thing as a – when a sign is nonconforming, any alterations to the sign must bring the sign in conformance, even if there's a variance. So with the changing of the sign – a new variance needs to be granted because it's altering what was approved. Yes.
Okay.
It's yep.
Great. That's all I need to hear. Okay. Thank you.
So
you did a much better job than I was.
So anyone who has a variance of any kind and wants to change the variance, no.
Just for signage, it's our ordinance is specific with signage about nonconformance, bringing.
Okay, what section is that? You look it up, but we can keep going.
I knew you'd ask that question, so I didn't press that one.
Okay.
Okay, great. All right.
Other questions?
I know that there is the signage requirements have changed. You know, the current signage is internally illuminated. The new signage is not. Okay. And the new signage meets the new requirements, with the exception.
Yeah. So, in what ways are you compliant, and what are you asking for relief on? So,
just note two, I thought.
So height,
and the allowance to put it above the windowsill.
So let's clarify, because I know David sent us a note clarifying that maybe you don't need a height variance.
Okay.
You know,
it's
37 1/4.
So the sign, the overall height, including the F that comes up and so on, is
37 7/16.
Okay. But the, David, according to the way we measure for the ordinance, the sign is compliant?
Yes, they are compliant as measured for the ordinance. We allow 10% of the sign area to be located outside that 36-inch requirement, and that allows for the creativity. I can read the definition.
Yeah, could you read that? I think that's important.
Yes. So, sign dimension as in measurement. The size of the sign shall be measured to the extreme limits of the message, background, and trim, as applicable, except that minor protrusions that total less than 10% of the sign area and extend no more than 12 inches from the main body of the sign shall not be included in the total regulatory dimension. When measured, this sign, 10.652 square inches is outside that 36-inch, which makes up 0.15% of the sign area is located outside the 36-inch window.
Less than the 10%, and maybe you can just point out on the sign. Come back to showing the sign. Can you just point out to us on the sign what those protrusions are that are greater than 36 inches?
So, following the little hand, the very top of the F comes out of the 36 inches, and that is for a 4.3.
We don't need the figure, I think.
Top of the dot of the I, the bottom of the A, the bottom of the E, and the bottom of the O.
And that's it.
That's all that comes outside the 36 inches.
And there's no background or banner underneath this, correct?
No, sir.
Okay.
So there's no
height variance required. That's the bottom line.
The location. Okay.
Yes?
Correct.
Okay.
With that in mind, I will withdraw that variance.
So what you are requesting, though, is what? Where it's mounted?
I am requesting to put the signage above the top window sill as opposed to below.
Which is where it currently is on the north side.
That is correct.
Is this a request only for the north side, or are you?
It is.
The south side, you're going to put it where the existing sign is?
Under the window sill.
Which is under.
Directed.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. So just for the north side. Okay.
And is the sign is not illuminated?
It is illuminated, but it's backlit with I would call halo lighting.
And that complies with the
ordinance? To my knowledge, yes.
Is the current sign illuminated also?
It is internally illuminated.
Okay.
Which is, how a lot of signs are. You can see on the bottom down here what it's going to look like at night. It's kind of doesn't look good on this screen, but
okay.
It has the lighting on the that comes around the letters as opposed to through the letter.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions from the board? David?
This is in reference to the earlier question about the section. It is section 225-401.4.I. Except for changes to bring an existing nonconforming sign into full conformance with this chapter, a sign in any sign district cannot be enlarged, extended, relocated, structurally reconstructed, or altered.
Okay.
So it can't be altered?
Altered, yeah. This would be altered.
Okay.
Thanks
for finding it.
Yes.
All right. I don't see anyone left in the room as far as members of the public, so no one else is here to comment. So thank you for your testimony. Again, the board has 45 days to render a decision, and you have 30 days thereafter to appeal if you're aggrieved in any way.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Have a good night.
Okay. I'm going to make a motion let me make the motion, and you guys can decide that we take our matter of other business, given a late hour discussion regarding hearing officers and remote attendance, that we take that discussion to our next meeting.
Second.
And hope that we don't have this many cases on our next meeting.
Yep.
Yes.
Lindsay, you seconded?
I seconded that.
Any discussion?
Three cases next month.
Three cases? Okay. Hopefully we won't be here as late, but...
Five decisions.
any discussion on that motion?
No.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, any opposed? Okay. So we'll put that on next month's meeting. Can I ask for a
motion to adjourn.
Thank you. I'll second it.
Seconded.
No, I seconded it. The chairman got to second it. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. All right. We'll stay in here again for deliberation. I seconded it. I want it. I want that one. Okay.
If we didn't get to that, though, I was going to
move right through it. No, I was prepared to make that motion before we even got in the room tonight because I figured it was going to be a late one. All right, so let's talk here. Should we maybe knock off what might be the easier ones here first? And
the sign maybe start?
Yeah, let's